Geekaholics, it's the Bad Guy Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thanks so much for downloading our show. Today you have myself, Aaron O'Brien. We also have David Duncan.
The beautiful flower.
A beautiful flower. We have Holly Michelle. Uh-oh, she's dying.
Coronavirus Michelle.
And we have returning special guest, Guy Davis. Hello, Guy.
Hello, the beautiful space orchid.
Yes, there you go. Guy Davis has been on many, many episodes. He is on Rocky Mountain Geek Tank podcast. And like I said before, last time he was on, they also stream live on Facebook on Thursdays. Yep. And he also is a very talented artist. He does, I know him from U.S. of Tamberlin, but he's also working on Bellatrix Rising. Right. That's his new project. And he does a bunch of other stuff. He does springs. He, he's always doing shit. So
I am. That's just me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome. Welcome, Guy. And I just posted an episode that featured you on the website. I just thought it was relevant to our current situation and how things are looking in the world. I didn't even realize you were on it until I started listening to it. I was like, oh, crap, guys. And so I had to like modify the post and tag you in it since you were in it. But I was like, since that was 8 years to Sanctuary.
Jeez, 4 years ago. That's so crazy. That was so long ago.
I guess now we're 4 years away from Sanctuary now. I think we should revisit that episode. So.
I really think we should, too. I just showed that to my kid. And, you know, my kid's 10, and I was just showing him that episode, and he was like, so, are these real? Are they really there? And I'm like, well, no. And he's like, oh, because it seems like something that would really happen. And I'm like, that's something terrifying, dude.
It is, and we talked about it, and we should talk about it again very soon so we can have our sequel, 4 Years to Sanctuary.
Yes, yes. But 4 Years to Sanctuary. Well,
this is every half the time.
I know, right?
Every
4 years. And then we'll get into Rise of the Khan Noonien Singh and stuff like that. So
That. Yeah. We'll have to go to books for that shit, though.
Here we go. We are in Star Trek Picard, and this is the last two episodes. This is
Latin.
Yeah, Latin, the Ite Arcadia Ergo, and which means in Arcadia I am, in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
That title is very loaded, too, if you know any conspiracy theories, so some crazy stuff there. So,
And I also will mention that Arcadia is like an Eden.
Yes, yes.
So, Arcadia is also off the coast of Maine.
Yeah, it is that too.
Is that too?
I wouldn't call that necessarily Eden though. I'm just saying.
But to fit in with the synthetic stuff in Fallout 4 expansion Far Harbor, you go to Arcadia where a girl is run away because she has suspected herself to be a synth. Because there's a synth base on Arcadia.
Nice.
Okay.
It just we're talking about synths in Star Trek, so I mean might as well, right? And Arcadia. So I'm connecting the dots for the people out there.
Well,
the Reapers are coming. The Reapers are coming.
You can get into full spoilers and at the end of the show, but let's just talk about non-spoilers just for the first couple minutes here. Guys.
Before we talk about all of them dying, right? Because we want to talk about them all dying. Oh, wait, what?
Yes. How Picard dies in the end of the episode.
How everybody
just
dies.
Joking. Guys, what do you think? Guy, how about episode. Yourself? You're just impression spoiler free.
Sadly, I actually kind of feel like this is the weaker of the ones so far. I wasn't as excited about this particular episode, and I'll get into more about why that it didn't feel so well, but for this, that doesn't mean it was bad by any stretch. But yeah, this one's weaker for me. So okay. That's my
what?
That's my feeling. I know
a CBS All Access show having a weak second to last episode. What?
I know. It's almost like that never happened.
It's almost like it's happened on every season of every CBS All Access Star Trek so far.
So far.
So how about you, Dave? Dave, you don't. I see you feel the same way as Guy.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, honestly, the last couple episodes have been the best episodes. It's definitely looking like it's going into Mass Effect territory hard, which is great. I just wish they would have told us they were going into Mass Effect territory. I don't know, around episode one. And that way I could have been a little bit more excited of what was to come instead of just scratching my head like, what the hell's going on and why should I care? With that, now that we know we should care, I guess it's a little bit more heavy. I mean, we learned last episode why we should care. But I also have a lot of questions this episode, which I can't really get into without spoilers. So it's like, it's okay. I mean, I definitely feel like the last half of the season is better than the first half. But this is doing CBS All Access Star Trek by numbers. They do a two-part episode at the end, and then the one right before the last one is literally a waste of time where nothing really happens when they should have been advancing the plot more. I mean, they did a little bit better than this one than season one of Discovery, but still, like, lackluster a little bit for me. Aaron, what about you?
You know, honestly, I enjoyed it.
I don't think it was bad.
A lot of adventure, a lot of fun seeing them get to their destination. Missed and a lot of... What's that?
Oh, I forgot to say missed opportunities.
Missed opportunities?
Yes.
Okay.
I think I met her once. Oh, wait.
She ruined missed. You, Guy.
No, but I enjoyed it, and it was a great adventure, and it's great to see what how everything kind of gets revealed. So I'm still on board. I'm still enjoying it. How about you, Holly?
I enjoyed it as well, but I also kind of agree that, you know, the episode, it didn't feel like a lot happened, even though there was a lot that happened. I kind of had to really think about why I enjoyed the episode. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, think hard, like, why do I like this?
Yeah. And I was like,
It's so like, weird there were moments- seeing you so, like, ho-hum about this episode, Holly, where I definitely think you were so excited about the first half of the season, and I was, like, bored to tears. And I'm a lot more invested now. I just wish they would have mentioned some things earlier so that I could have been invested for longer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I disliked the episode at all. I liked a lot about it, but I don't know. I guess I don't know.
So it's good. It sounds like Holly and I are going to be in this one, going trying to like figure out why we're that's going to be our thing this episode.
Yeah.
Why are we like suddenly like spun out? What's the story?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll figure that out. So let's
questions get into full to be spoilers.
Answered. Full spoilers. This is obviously season one of Star Trek Picard, episode 9, aired March 19th, 2020, and this is it's a Arcadia Ergo. So,
boy, wow, that was a tongue twister.
Yes. I don't speak Latin fluently. So we get to the Picard ship, and they are going through the transwarp conduit. And we also see Dr. Girardi. She's freaked out under a desk, and because they're obviously it's a turbulent ride, so obviously she's
she has to be told to use a seatbelt later, but she just doesn't. She's a doctor, but doesn't have the foresight to use one now.
Right.
Well, yeah, I had seen somewhere that somebody had said that implies that only like these private ships use seatbelts.
Yeah. So. Well, right, exactly. Obviously
the USS Franklin.
All the other Enterprises never used them, and they all fly out of their seats every time something happens.
Yeah. Actually, no, didn't Enterprise E have the emergency straps too?
I don't remember that.
Because didn't they put them on to crash into the Shinzon ship so they wouldn't fly out into space?
No, I think they just kind of hung on.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, they reach their destination. They get to Soji's home planet, and when they get there, they realize that the Narek ship had been kind of like tailing them the whole time, and they get into this basically a firefight with Narek's ship. So that's I don't know how he got into the conduit and followed them like that, but I guess he figured out a way.
It was a really bad explanation in the show. They're like, oh, I guess he just figured out our trajectory from our last known position. And I'm like, okay, well, your last known position was going to Deep Space 12 that he knew of. No, he didn't even know that because they lost him before. So
he was sitting outside of it, so I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I don't even understand. Can someone explain the conduit?
It's
they're just... Yeah, go ahead, Dick Guy.
I was going to say, so they, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut everybody off. I like the fact that all three of us, like, jumped in at the same time.
Conduits!
Conduits! So the Borg had transwarp conduits that were explained in Voyager, where they could travel much, much faster through the galaxy to explain, mostly to explain, how we ended up with the Borg being introduced in Q-Who and them being 75,000 light years away, and yet in like a season later, all of a sudden we've got a Borg ship in Sector 1 coming in for Wolf 359. So the explanation to that Voyager had put through was the transwarp conduits. They have these super speed highways that they have built through the galaxy.
Jump gates,
which were they were from an assimilated race.
It's like a slides, space slides.
Yeah,
it's like a Star Trek Discovery's spore drive, but slow compared to the spore drive, but still faster. Nice. But still faster than anything else. And also, since they're gateways, they have specific endpoints and start points. Like there's a junction. Like in the Delta Quadrant, and the junction reaches out to all the different quadrants with different lanes, like a highway.
Well, so between Narek's ship and the La Siriana, they're fighting between each other, and then who comes through that conduit as well?
Don't do it yet. Please don't come through Borg Cube. Please don't come through yet. Come through the next episode when we can use you.
The Borg Cube came through piloted by 709.
Stupid missed opportunity.
Which is, I still think 7-9 flying that Borg cube is kick-ass.
It's kick-ass, but it's in the air.
That was so cool.
It was cool, but for 2 seconds, it crashes. It's a huge missed opportunity. It could have been so much more awesome next episode coming out of the conduit.
Well, what none of them expected was going to happen was that these giant orchids were going to fly up and just pull all the power off of them. So
I think we call them orchids.
Space orchids.
Beautiful flower.
Yep.
That's me.
So they just show up out of space. These vehicles come up and they just flower out and they grab onto each ship. And they, most of them encase, except obviously the Borg cube is just too big, and they drain the power, and then all the ships just fall onto the planet into the atmosphere. So, they actually crash onto the planet, but fortunately this the orchid that was covering Picard's ship seems to have at least protected it somehow from completely being destroyed. So
I guess it did with the cube, but mm-hmm. we're not sure.
But then Picard kind of it goes through this weird thing where he kind of gets like taken over somehow, and he says thank you for coming, everyone, and everyone looks at him like, what the hell's wrong with him? So he kind of got like something jacked into his brain or something, so that's not really explained too well.
They never mentioned it again, but it could just be he's just going crazy because it was his space syndrome.
Out later too, though. Like, it could have been some weird something talking through him. But.
Yeah, it might, you're right. I mean, but that, it could be because of his illness, the syndrome? Not Benzai.
No, you're saying Benzai. Syndrome. It's Iromotic. Yeah, Bendai syndrome is what Sarek had.
Sarek died. Yeah,
but couldn't he have gotten a little bit of it from Sarek? Because he wasn't socially distant enough from him during the.
I was going to say he wasn't socially distant. Yeah,
that he mind melt. He
didn't
close.
Wash his hands after the mind melt.
That's right.
Or no, before the mind meld.
Oh my god!
That's how it's transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to Picard. He's in the sick bay, and we have Girardi kind of like looking over him. Apparently, all the power's out. She did have an old medical tricorder.
She's gonna kill him. Don't let her be alone with him.
She can't do it because she doesn't have the machinery unless she's going to stab him through the heart.
She could just strangle him in his sleep. He's an old, weak man.
Put a pillow over his face.
Oh, yeah, he could do the pillow thing, too.
Yeah, but scanning him with the tricorder, realized that he does have the erratic syndrome, so...
I don't want to be in a room alone with her.
But Rios does.
Oh, yes. he likes it dangerous.
He likes some dangerous.
You saw his dominatrix ties on his bed last episode.
So she comes into that that realization that Picard is dying. So Picard kind of like tries to brush it off a little bit, but then when he comes out of the sick bay, when he's he talks to the crew, he basically tells them what's happening. He says there's a what he's suffering, a brain
abnormality.
Yeah. He says, I don't want you to treat me like a dying man, because it's going to piss me off. So, interesting take. Then they get to, they realize that they have to go to this, the main place where all the rest of the synths are, and somehow Soji knows where this is. But unfortunately, the Borg cube is in the opposite direction, which crashed. So they're going to go check that out.
Well, they briefly saw the settlement, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, she understood. Like Soji's got all the stuff that's still in her head now that she's like accessing, which she have all these ideas and memories from what she had from before. It's just that they're not all clear.
You said
this is not unheard of because that happened in Brothers, of course.
Right. Right, exactly.
Before was the first one of the new synths. That's why it was called B4.
Ah, you guys are my brothers. Shut up, B4.
My gosh.
I don't want to shut up, Daddy. Brother, sister, whatever you are.
I have to say, I know what you guys are talking about because I've seen the episode. But when you originally said brothers, I went, what does this have anything to do with Will Ferrell and...
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I was like, what?
That would be funny if that was tied into it somehow.
Oh, man.
So they go check out the Borg cube, and this is where they see Elnor. And obviously there's other ex-Borg, ex-Bees there. And they even call Picard Locutus there. And Seven of Nine's there. And they kind of meet up and kind of figure out what's happening. So what they're going to do is try to get
the Borg ship working. They try to get I think they're trying to make it fly. But Seven's like, what do you need? And then they're like, oh, we need the long-range sensors. And they count, 209 Romulan warbirds on the way?
218.
18.
Yep. 109 is what he was first worried about.
109 is the joke. Because you can take care of the first 109. It's after that you're in trouble.
Right, exactly. So they're kind of like trying to get themselves set up there at the Borg cube. And then Picard and the rest are going to trek to the synths station where they're all, or city or whatever settlement where they're living. So they take off and they go to there. And also Picard has to explain to Elnor what's happening to him. So, and they have this little like exchange when they say goodbye to each other. And even
he doesn't really explain though anything.
No,
you don't tell me nothing.
He just becomes very, Shakespearean. And he's just like, this is how it is with anyone. It's not just me. Mm-hmm. So and then he's like, I'm proud of you. And that's all he says.
Yeah.
And then Seven of Nine all of a sudden is nice to Picard for the first time ever.
She's been with him forever.
Well, no, but she's been like utter dick to him like the entire time.
That's true.
And then she says something nice to him for the first time in this episode.
I think that the reason why is because Picard looks so normal that for an ex-Borg, like, what's her real name?
Annika.
You know, she sees him and there's not necessarily disgust, but...
Envy.
Envy, yes. So mm-hmm.
Envy her, that he's dying.
Envy that he looks normal.
He looks normal. That his scars are on the inside, not the outside, and hers are.
I don't think there's that envy. I think it's just she just doesn't like his reputation, and she didn't before. She didn't trust him because of Starfleet and its failure.
I actually am of the opinion that it's because he was saving the universe and fighting the good fight. Then all of a sudden, after the Romulan thing went down, he just went home and sat in his vineyard for 15 years.
He was waiting to die.
Yep. I think that's literally the way they probably wrote this out, because that's the way he's been played out through this whole show. So that's my thought, too.
I like that thought.
Yeah.
I still think they should have called this show Everyone Hates Picard.
Everyone hates Picard.
It's very apt. No one likes him in this show.
So they get to the Synth settlement, and this is where they get all the different types of synths. So we see some synths that look a lot like Data, some that look just like Soji and a cross with Data. So there's like all these different. So it's very interesting.
It's one that looks a lot like Lore.
And we get the return of Brett Spiner, who plays
Dr. Soong.
Soong, yeah, but Alton Inigo Soong.
Soong, yeah. Which, by the way, apparently that is very intentional, that he is AI Soong.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually apparently Brent Spiner's idea. And everybody went, oh, yeah, we'll do that.
for sure.
Lots of people online are calling this is going to be Lore. But it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't think it would be Lore. Doesn't make a lot of sense at Lore. Although, they shut Lore down, and then we don't really know what happened to Lore after that.
I mean, presumably, Maddox could have taken his parts to start this new colony.
Right. Evil colony.
Maybe that's why there is that. Because
they're all based on Lore.
Yeah.
Well, so as they get to know everyone, they get to see all the different versions of like Soji androids, and then there's other types of androids as well.
So many twins.
Yeah. So, and they're all
because everybody's like, a twin. They have to be done in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Double mint gum.
And so there's one that's called Sutra, and
Kama died.
Oh, yeah. Poor Kama. Kama chameleon.
So Sutra talks to Girardi about the admonition, Commodore O showed her with the mind mold, and apparently Sutra can do a mind meld,
which is weird.
Hey! Spock mind melded with Nomad, so I can buy anything at this point.
It was a probe, so it's a mechanical probe, which was weird. So
is it a Vulcan gene, or is it a practice, like it's yoga? It's a Vulcan
practice, but you have to be telepathic to join mine.
They said that she modified herself to be telepathic.
Was Nomad telepathic? That was a line.
No, but what's his name? Spock was, yeah. So
a lot of people online are complaining about Sutra being able to mind meld, but I'm like, TOS, he mind melds with a fucking robot. So your this can't happen is null and void at this point. TOS made it null and void.
Yeah, if you see If you see that episode with Nomad, it's ridiculous, but he does do it.
But he does do it. So, like, I mean, I mean, how come we didn't see Spock mind meld with the Romulan bird of prey or the Enterprise or something like that?
Well, those weren't intelligent, but he could have mind melded theoretically with V'ger.
He should have mind melded with the Enterprise computer.
He was going to. He did mind meld with V'ger.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's why he went out in the spacesuit.
That's why he went on the spacesuit.
Yeah, but did he mind meld with it? Yeah, I guess he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He totally mind melded with
V'ger. He put himself in the V'ger orifice because it seeps in the like it's like your it goes into your bloodstream easier. You can mind meld to the anus very easily.
You think he's gonna mind meld with the ship in like Discovery?
Well, he should have mind melded with the ship in Star Trek 2, so he didn't get blown up. I mean, get radiation sickness.
Well, through the mind meld, Sutra sees the evolution of organic life, and that how they bring through that evolution, they create synthetics, and because of the synthetics, they create are so perfect, they are perceived as a threat, and because the synthetics are built even better, organic life is kind of left behind.
Fox decomposes yet again.
Yeah, I know. We see that Fox again decomposing. And they
pay good money for that footage.
Right.
You know, what is with that footage? Like, what? It's like everyone uses that footage. We because the last joke was from last episode. That was because that was in a Nine Inch Nails video.
Song. Yeah. I wonder if they have to pay rights to Nine Inch Nails.
No, I think
it's stock footage.
Oh, it's definitely stock footage. Yeah, I know.
Somewhere in the universe, there's this alliance of synthetic life, which will send a signal, and that if they're about to be attacked, that they will basically come and get rid of any threats to their to synthetics, but at the risk of eliminating all organic life. So,
does it say at the risk, or does it say with the purpose of, because it seemed like it was the purpose to destroy organic life, not necessarily side effect.
Not a side effect, but yeah, I mean, it would be the purpose because they, I guess this happens all the time. Synthetic life's created, organic life freaks out, and then organic life tries to get rid of synthetic life, and if they get this message, they call
the Reapers.
Get these guys to come down and take care of business. So.
The Trek Reapers.
So that is concerning, and then we get
it'll be fine.
We get to Soon's lab, and Girardi and Soon have a interaction, and they talk about Maddox, and he kind of like chastised her for killing Maddox, and it was like, you know, that's a brilliant mind that you just snuffed out.
Tisk tisk, shame on you.
Yeah, well, it's obviously Soon is a little morally eccentric? Bankrupt.
Yeah.
They see that they say he's constructing a golem, and a golem is a Jewish folklore. Where you put a scroll into its mouth and you can do what you say it to, tell it to do. It's made of clay, apparently.
It's also in D&D a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in Jewish culture that's made of clay, I've noticed.
And a lot of things,
dreidel, clay dreidel, dreidel. That would make sense. It is made of clay.
Gollum, Gollum, Gollum.
Made it out of clay.
With Gollum, I will play. Okay.
Anyway, so this Gollum was the expert at substrate work. So he was kind of like stopped at that point. So he's saying that he wanted to get this thing finished so he can basically put all his memories and his brain downloaded into this construction. And Girardi says that she will help him with this. And then we get Soji.
He kind of guilts her into it, to be completely honest. It's another one of these manipulative bullshit things where he's like, you're bad. You're terrible. You took a life. Do you want to save a life?
Do you want to save me, little girl? Try not to kill me this time.
I'm not saying she's innocent, and that I just felt like it was really, even though she probably would have offered anyway, it was kind of manipulative of him to do that.
Well,
yeah, I think that bothered me too. It was like, really? Are you just going to keep picking on Jordy and then just, we'll just hold this over you and then this too. And this seems like a thing to hold over. It's like,
honestly, she deserves it. She hasn't thrown up enough yet.
Right? There hasn't been any throwing up in this episode at all.
She did not barf yet. So this is, I want my refund, CBS All Access. Girardi's supposed to puke on every episode.
Right.
If we remember soon from Star Trek Enterprise, remember that he's not the great-great-great-grandfather or whatever you want to call him.
He's not super law-abiding.
He's not a very good man either, so.
Yeah.
So anyways, next we get Soji and Sutra. They're arguing about, basically, because Soji, I forgot to mention, did tell the Synths that the Romulan fleet's coming. And Sutra thinks we should just, you know, ring that Synth Alliance alarm, get them to come and show up and save them. But she's like, well, what does that do to everybody else? And she's like, screw them.
Yeah, Sutra doesn't care. And speaking of Latin, does Sutra mean something in Latin? Because I'm curious what that would mean.
Sutra is Hindi, and it does mean, I believe it's a flower. It's a type of flower. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember looking it all up and going, there's a lot of references here.
To flowers?
To flowers. Right, and I think that that's what it is. It's like a I can almost see it. It's like a tulip flower, but it's not quite. I believe that it actually looks very much like female reproductive organs.
Anatomy.
And that's one of the reasons why Kama Sutra is called Kama Sutra.
Yum.
And I believe that's the entire thing.
Gotcha.
Yummy.
Trying to be like, I'm trying to be gentle because we're on air, but you get the idea.
Okay, you're on air with somebody who likes to be extremely inappropriate at times, so...
Oh, yeah, Holly, you're one that
I think
talked.
You're okay. I'm the inappropriate one?
Yes, you're the inappropriate... Everyone knows that.
yeah, you're...
Also, where's all the thunderstorms and the two red moons? Just curious.
Right.
You can see the two moons.
You can't see the thunderstorms, though. This looks like a dry, arid desert that never gets rain.
Actually, there were a lot of thunderstorms off the distance in that particular world. So I did see that. They were, but it's like, I guess the storms must roll. I don't know. So we'll have to see.
Well, so Rios and crew are going to go off, and they're going to fix the ship that's been kind of like just left there in the desert. And we get a moment between Picard talking to Raffi, basically saying,
"I love you, man. You're not getting
my Bud Light. I love you. You're not getting my Bud Light." Yeah.
Oh wait, I apologize. I wish to drop in here real quick because I just Googled Sutra. So Sutra actually is Hindu for a condensed manual or text. So it's like a codec, which actually, that's right. As I recall, all of the androids on the planet were named after codices of some sort or another.
What does Soji mean?
That's a good question, you people. Asking me weird questions like that. The
first or second episode, no, it's the first episode, Daj mentions that their names, what they're named after... Mm-hmm. And of course, they're not in this notebook.
Right, because, like, Soji isn't actually... I mean, if you Google Soji, the first hit is Memory Alpha. Yeah. So Soji isn't a word that is from a different language.
I feel like she said something about her sister were, like, blue and yellow orchids. So her father named them after those orchids. And one was... blue and one was pink or something.
Well, you see, I remember you said that, Holly, but then I remember you were disappointed that her name wasn't the other part of the name of Soji, blah, 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 whatever
you're right.
The name of the flower was.
You're right. Yeah.
I mean,
Dodge was.
It was Dodge something, 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 something. And you didn't, and you were expecting her sister to be the other part of the Dodge thing, and it wasn't, and that's what you were disappointed by.
You're right.
Right. And I mean, really, honestly, I know what Soji means in Japanese, and it means nothing. That would be useful because it means general administrator, and it's a male term. So that has nothing to do with her at all.
Please reboot and call your general administrator.
Right? Right. Although that it's could your be system a joke administrator. They're making. It could be. Could be one of those things where it means that. I don't know.
Well, because the thing is also.
Like a system admin.
She came from Data, supposedly specifically came from Data. So, I mean, like, Data was a man, so. Or a male android. A non-binary man android? I don't know. Something like that.
Well, anyways, besides that, so we get, next we get Narek is been captured. They found Narek out in the wilderness, and he's in, like, android jail. And he's asking for water and stuff like that. And
how would
basically,
Romulan street prisoners? Let's change the subject. Like, no. Come on, let me do it like you do it.
It was funny to me that they didn't have him coax her into letting him out. Like, oh, we'd break bread with our, you know, our prisoners, and
we let them roam free.
You know what I mean? Like, that was a missed opportunity.
I thought he just wanted to bone another android. That's why I was like, come here, I want to bone you.
I know, right?
That's the vibe I got. Like the entire time he was in jail, I'm like, what? It's weird.
Well, he's just looking to kill somebody. That's all. He's a creep.
But he likes screwing them before he kills them.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's his
way. I don't know.
It's his way.
It's his MO.
He could, like I said, he could, in his own fucked up way, care about Soji.
Well, she does.
I think he does.
Yeah.
In his own pitiful, stupid way, but yeah, he does say that he does love her, but unfortunately, he says that it's too bad because the Romulan fleet's going to come down, rain down fire on their world.
Oh yeah, and then he threatens her. That's what I'm saying. It's that toxic. It's that weird toxic stuff that
he's a dick.
He's a dick.
Yeah, I love you, but I'm going to fucking kill you, and my people are going to fucking kill you. It's like, okay, but.
Well, yeah, he was like, I love you. Let me out. Do what I want. Oh, you're not going to do what I want? Guess what? Fuck you.
Every single time he talks to her, it's like one step forward, 10 steps backward, which is, I never understood why she liked him in the first place. It made no sense.
I told you.
Every time.
Just dumb. They just...
They fall for that shit all the time.
No, for the record, everyone listening, no male has said that on this show at all, I don't think.
Nope.
I have said it many times, however.
What have you said?
That girls are stupid.
Oh, no, I don't think I've ever said that here.
No,
I've said you have. Some girls acting stupid, maybe.
Maybe, but we are. We act on emotion, not always on logic, and when you're dealing with somebody who's a manipulative prick, you fall for shit. I've done it.
Girls often go for bad guys, so the bad boys kind of thing. So
it depends on the girl's personality.
If
they're way off of the Richter scale, that's really bad. If they're way off and not, you know, very different from the girl's personality, yes, they're going to go for the bad guy. But if they're a naughty girl, they're probably not going to look for the naughty guy. They're going to want...
They go for the good boy?
The nerdy, Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Opposites attract, like Paula Abdul said. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Opposites attract. Sorry.
All right, so anyway. Besides that... So you're saying even android synths fall into those traps?
I don't know. I think that this particular synth was just...
Badly programmed.
No, I think she was sweet and she was naive, but she also, like she said, they've never had a prisoner. They've never had to have any type of hostile behavior before, which I find odd because Sutra is quite hostile from the get-go.
She's very, very aggressive. Well, we get next interchange between Picard and Soji. They're in Maddox's quarter as Picard's trying to contact Starfleet, and she's trying to talk about the logic of sacrifice.
He didn't do it last week. What an irresponsible old fart.
What?
I said he didn't do it last week. Last week we were talking about how he must have called them before they got there, that they were changing course. He apparently did not. What an irresponsible old captain.
I like the silence here.
I don't understand.
What are you saying, David?
He's saying that last episode, they were supposed to meet up with them at Deep Space 12.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They went to Soji's homeworld. And instead of calling ahead and say, hey, this is where we're going to be, he just took off and, you know, they went to Soji's homeworld without warning Starfleet. So now he's trying to tell
Starfleet.
Yeah,
but it was only 15 minutes long. Like, it was just like a split decision. He didn't really have time.
No, he
had.
He had plenty of time. We theorized last week that it happened off screen, but apparently it did not happen off screen. Oh, my God.
So as an ex-teacher, if you are like, going to take a kid to her house, you don't necessarily call the parents or any way that the parents could find out if they're beating her, if there's some kind of abuse going on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're cautious. Mm-hmm. You take care. And so I think part of this is he knows that there's something going on with Starfleet. So he's not just going to just in the open go, here's where the homeworld of the androids are.
Touché.
Everybody.
But at the same time, he could also warn them about Commodore O. But he apparently did not make a phone call at all to do anything.
Yep, well, she's so high up.
Riker.
He would have to have good evidence to make that kind of accusation, especially since he is essentially a disgraced admiral.
That's right. No, you're right, Collie. And not just that, we don't know how deep the corruption goes. So right. it could go to Admiral Clancy too.
Well, that's why we were worried about it last time. But at the same time, we also kind of assumed. I mean, Aaron Stewart and I were kind of assuming that it was done off screen. But I was kind of worried it wasn't, and it looks like it didn't happen off screen.
I wonder if we're going to get Captain Crandall showing up to save the day.
Captain Crandall.
I mean, because they dropped so many Chekhov's guns on that one.
Yeah, that there's an extra ship.
I think the Enterprise is going to show up at the very end.
I'm sure it will.
It's going to be Star Trek Discovery season. It's going to be Star Trek Discovery season one all over again. The Enterprise is going to show up at the last second. And it'll probably be Captain Wesley or Worf or something like that.
Okay. Well, let's keep our ideas behind until we finish the story. So Soji and Picard are talking, and she's talking about the logic of sacrifice, and she sees no logic in life, or you know, the calculation be of life and death. And Picard says it. I guess it depends on the person holding the knife. So, and they're talking about how Girardi killed Maddox, and how she reacted to that, and just trying to figure out like. Basic Soji's trying to find the idea of if the killing was done by fear or by logic or some way to survive. So she's struggling with the moral and ethical things of what Agnes did, but also maybe what she has to do too with this alliance of synths. You know, since Sutra wants to basically bring them in to play.
Yeah.
So then we get back to Narek and talking to Sutra, and there's another guard, Saga, and she has like a hummingbird, I think, on like a brooch, which
it was a hummingbird, yeah.
Which he uses to.
Was it Narek? Do you think it was Narek, or do you think it might have been Sutra?
I think could have been Sutra. I think Sutra did it.
Could have been Sutra, but
yeah, I think I'd go with that too.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying Sutra's the bad egg?
Oh, absolutely.
From the very moment I saw her, I was like, "Ooh, she's bad."
She's bad.
Yeah, ooh, she bad. It was like, ooh.
No, I was like, ooh, she bad, because like she for whatever reason she looks hotter than regular Soji to me.
Is it because she's gold?
I don't know. And maybe it's just the fact that she acts way more confident than Soji does. Soji's like, I don't know what's going on, this and that. But this one, she's like cold and cunning. And I don't know. I don't know if it's the personality or the gold. Maybe it's a little
bit
of both.
She also wears like more sensual clothes.
Revealing clothes.
It wasn't that. I mean, it was like her face. Like just the way her facial expressions go. Because there's a lot of close-ups on her face. And I was like, wow, she's like strangely hotter. I mean, yeah, the outfit was cool too, but I don't know.
We know what you're attracted to.
So Kaylee gets some spray paint.
So Sutra starts talking to all the synths in the compound or village or whatever you want to call it, basically saying the Romulans are going to arrive soon and that they need to basically bring in this alliance of synths or a synthetic life form to come and defeat the Romulan fleet. And obviously everyone knows that this is it's going to be trouble for all the organic life forms on the planet and maybe throughout the whole area. We don't know how bad it's going to get. And she even calls them the oppression of organics. So that's scary.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
I just find it odd that, you know, they all have this built-in knowledge of who Picard is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess I can understand why they wouldn't believe that he would be able to get the Federation on their side, but they should understand that he is an ally to them. With all their knowledge of him, they should understand that, and yet it turns hostile.
Well, because Picard does stand up and say, I will be an advocate for you, I will fight for you, for the Federation, to get you protection and rights, and this is when soon come and say, oh, where were you when the Federation put the ban on synths after the Mars attacks? Oh, you weren't there, were you? Well, he's not going to do anything for you, just like he didn't do anything before for you or the Romulans. And they put Picard under house arrest.
I still wish they would have explained why they turned synths into a mindless race. They still haven't explained how we got from Measure of a Man to here. It just happened, and no one said anything as to why there was, like, synths just made as, like, a slave force. Because that was the entire point of Measure of a Man, to not build a slave race.
I don't think they're brainless. I think that the girl, the two with, like, the hummingbird, and I think that the scene between her and Narek did them a disservice by playing her up like kind of a fool, like an idiot. But she didn't act that way before.
I didn't call them brainless. I'm talking about the writers, not the androids.
Oh, it sounded like you were saying that they wrote them to be slaves.
No, they did. The androids on Mars, they were slaves.
Oh.
Well, no, like, they weren't.
How did we
get... Wait, okay. Again, we're jumping down something. Sorry. Let's finish. We're almost done. Sutra was going to put Agnes Girardi, Dr. Girardi, in arrest as well. Girardi says that she wants to help Soong complete his work with this golem. And she's basically calls her like the mother. She says she'd be a mother, like a mother that would die for
Soong
her own children.
Soong says that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Girardi's going to do that work and help out Soong. And this is where Picard's taken away. And then we jump to the Romulan fleet and we see Commodore O is in charge and they're coming in to attack the planet within 24 hours. So.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. And this is to be continued to the next episode. Who wants to talk first? Dave, I think you are just chomping at the bit to tell us what you think.
Oh, I'm just so confused. I mean, it's just different things have come up. We're just like, why are they doing it this way? They're kind of telling us the plot, but there's that giant missing hole between Measure of a Man and the Mars attack. Like, why did they become these slave race when the whole point of Measure of a Man was to ensure that was never going to happen? It's like they made it and they're avoiding talking about it just so the plot can happen. Like, there's been no explanation. Well,
if I can rebuttal just real quick,
sure,
not that Measure of a Man doesn't mean anything, obviously it does, but we're talking about some court case that was held in some far remote outpost. It's very likely that, you know, there was like a Starfleet Federation Supreme Court that came and maybe overruled that, a higher court. Mm. So we just don't know.
Well, I mean, I thought the point of it was so it could be written in his law. Like,
what's that?
I thought the point of that trial was so it could be written in his law.
But that was, 25 years in between? A lot of things changed in 25 years. Mm. And in addition to that, we don't know the level that synths that we saw on Mars, if they were as highly functioning as Data or there was something below that. they seemed a little below it. It's like they weren't all there. So we don't know what that's about, too. You know, we don't know what level they were at. So obviously they were, we see them being not mistreated, but kind of like degraded a bit. Like, you know, hello, good morning, plastic people and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
and just kind of making fun of them and treating them subspecies, subhuman kind of thing. So,
which was a lot of the measure of a man to prevent that from happening.
Absolutely.
But you also, I mean, we've gone through author from Voyager. I mean, it's clear that there is only so much tolerance that the society has of something not living before they decide to make them scrub out plasma conduits or dilithium processing. Right? I mean, that's the whole point of Photons Be Free.
Yeah.
That was the entire point of that, too. And it's clear that, you know, it's, to me, that fits. It fits very well with the way that the holograms are used in Author.
Mm.
Where, you know, so, you know, all those people are saying, but Picard is so dark and dismal. I'm like, well, yeah, but this is set up long before that. This is in Voyager, where they were doing the Federation obviously says, well, we'll consider you equal until you screw up, at which time we'll lock you away and make you do work, you know. Yeah. And that was part of, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, I guess, but I wish they would have at least mentioned the politics behind it somewhere instead of just like, oh, well, we have this episode, which is heavily, Measure of Man's heavily inspired for the season, but they haven't ever explained the midpoint.
And I have to agree with that. I mean, I have to say, you know, one of the complaints that many people have had is that Picard has run really slow. And I've been saying, well, that makes total sense because to me, it's a 10-hour movie. This is just the movie that happened after Nemesis. And I'm okay with that. That totally works. But again, if you're going to have 10 hours in this movie, you could at least go into the politics.
Oh, absolutely. Lots of opportunity on this show with that. Also, I'm not super buying the pendant to the eye killing an android. Data's been shot with bow and arrow. Data's been shot with bullets. Data's been essentially blown up, and he's been fine.
Yeah.
And I know there's the biogenetic cloning or whatever, but she was also one of the gold robots, so I assume she's more like Data than more like Soji. You know what I mean?
Well, we don't know.
They're doing Data callbacks and how he looks. So,
seemed kind of stupid though, because like that's a stupid way for anything to die. Even if you stick one of those brooches in my eye, I mean, I'll scream in pain and maybe I'll pass out, but I don't think I'm going to die away.
No, I mean, people.
I mean, they don't show that she actually died. They just showed her unresponsive.
They show her on soon, the funeral, kind of, on a funeral pyre.
Soon was kind of just like, oh, poor Saga, she was so wonderful, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, it was like a funeral they were having for her when Picard broke in and did a speech thing.
I don't know. That was the whole thing.
Like,
her body wasn't there.
Yeah, it was. It was laying there with the pendant sticking out of the eyeball.
I feel like I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was there. It was there. That's
yep. Mm-hmm.
They were having her funeral, and that's when Picard came in and was like, I got my speech ready. I'll make you, you know, everything will be fine. That's when that came in. And I was like, well, Data got all this stuff happened to him. Totally. People can live without their eye. As long as they're, you know, medically treated and they can live without their eye just fine. So a robot should be fine without their eyeball. Except for maybe Ichip. Ichip cannot live without his eye.
Apparently.
He's like, kill me now. My eye's gone. I've got nothing to live for.
Dies.
I can't see any future.
My other eyes.
What else? What else?
Blind.
Dave?
Just the Borg cube thing was an absolute missed opportunity. It was badass seeing it come through the conduit, and then it crashes immediately. So I was like, oh, okay, that wasn't as cool as it could have been. I mean, because even one Borg cube might have a little bit of problems with 200 modern Romulan warbirds that probably have Borg technology in them, since they were harvesting tons of stuff from that Borg cube. So I mean, like, they would have probably been a tough fight, even one Borg cube against all those ships.
Which is why Sutra needed Narek, because he's about to go sabotage the cube.
Yeah, probably.
Go after the cube, right? Absolutely.
So, So there is one thing. I mean, this is where I actually disagree quite a bit with you, David, on this one, because I actually kind of like the fact that I had felt like this whole episode was Deus Ex Machina. I mean, pun intended. But the cube could have been the major Deus Ex Machina of this entire thing. And instead, they just disabled it right off the bat. And you're like, oh, well, that's a nice twist. You know, yeah, if the cube had come in and saved the day, I would have been like, well, that's kind of tropey. You know, here we have the hated Borg. We hate these Borg. We've always, oh, too bad they saved us. Now we can't hate them. You know, I would have been kind of like, oh, that's just about as straightforward of a plot. But aren't they synthetic too? Yeah, but that's what I mean. The Federation hates the Borg because they suck. But, oh, good, they saved the universe in the end. So maybe we shouldn't hate them. I'd be so ticked off at that. You know what I mean? I'd be like, really?
I don't know.
I mean,
I just don't know
how this is going to end.
I mean, I just love the Borg cubes and having Seven drive it around. And the fact that Seven got to drive it around for like all of 5 seconds was extremely disappointing. I mean, granted, they could fix it and fly away, I suppose. But and they have the Seven in each, not each episode. I mean, the Seven and Elmore show. Those are most of my burning questions about the episode. Just also, yeah, the Mass Effect thing is starting to come into play. I'm interested to see how it's going to pan out in the next episode. I definitely think if they would have introduced it way sooner and had this bigger buildup instead of this vague Soji is going to cause the end of everything. And in fact, O is the one that's going to cause the destruction, because if O didn't mind meld with Jurati, Jurati would have had the information for Sutra to get out of her head and hit the signal to send to the advanced robots. So technically, O is the destroyer of worlds if you trace it back to its source.
Well,
maybe. And if you trace that all the way back, you're at Karate Kid 2 when she was sitting there. Oh, wait, I've gone too far.
Karate Kid 2. Dave, could you explain the Mass Effect thing? Because I've never played
Mass Effect, so I have absolutely zero clue what you're talking about.
And Mass Effect, the basically every 50,000 years, this race called the Reapers comes and collects all synthetic life and AI and technology, and they kill all the advanced races that created it, or they, you know, harvest them and make them into like the mindless cyborgs, and then they go away, and then 50,000 years they come back and do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And so Mass Effect are basically fighting against this giant threat of basically the extinction of the human race, or all the sentient races in Mass Effect, which is what they're leading us to here in Picard. I just wish they would have, like, The Soji being the destroyer was really, really vague, and they didn't really explain that till episode 8. And she's not even really the destroyer. They're just going to call up this other race that's going to destroy everything. So it's kind of like a red herring or a wild goose chase, sort of.
Well, we don't know yet, but I mean, it seems...
Technically, Soji could make the phone call, but if Sutra didn't know mind-melding, and if O hadn't mind-melded Jurati, this wouldn't have happened. And Mass Effect, it's on a clock. It happens every 50,000 years. It's a cycle. But, I mean, it's still a cycle in Picard. The robots just get advanced enough to make a phone call.
Well, and the race comes out. And you have to basically, hit that alarm from the admonition thing.
It's a slightly different mechanism, but the end result is the same, which is really interesting. And I really wish they would have gone on this a little bit harder. And also, the La Serena itself looks very much like a ship out of Mass Effect, more so than it looks like a ship out of Star Trek, just from an aesthetics design point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But who wants to go next?
Yeah, who wants to talk next? Who's got a burning thing to say?
Burning in my loins!
I don't think Guy and I either have burning things to say.
You know, I kind of feel like it's kind of an ember. It's just kind of not really burning, just there.
Right.
Well, I mean, I'll just say that, first of all, the biggest part of the plot confusion for me, if I'm going to be critical, is why was Soji and Daj set out to do? What was their purpose? What was Soji's purpose to go to the Borg cube? What did that play into? I mean, other than, are they just trying to get information? Because they weren't looking for Maddox.
It was to expose the corruption and the reason behind the Mars attack. That was the idea.
But how did they know? But how was that going to play out? I mean, one was on a Borg cube and another one was on Earth and
going to their school memories.
Yeah, their memories would all have been basically wiped of what they knew before. So it's
kind of... Why would you send a brainless robot? I mean, why would you send a robot on a mission when it doesn't know the mission?
Right. I mean, other than maybe finding Picard, you know, Dodge trying to find the Picard in the very beginning.
Oh, I can tell you exactly why you do that. I mean, to answer David's question, ask the Russians, because they put sleepers. They put sleepers all over the place, and we. I mean, that was the whole plan.
I mean, sleepers, spies. Yeah, that's fine. But what I mean, maybe as a reconnaissance, like, you know, getting information. But or are you talking like a Manchurian candidate kind of thing?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, it could either be that, or I mean, it could just be the her mission could have been to be human. Is this model good enough? Is this a good enough model to pass?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so if so, that could be her entire mission, would be to send them out to be humans and see if anybody notices.
How do the robots if they're posing as humans, how'd the Romulans ever find out that they're robots?
I don't know.
The questions keep piling up and the show does not provide answers.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thought too, is that, I mean, well, we did see, obviously the Romulans got a hold of Rios's ship's data somewhere along the line. Because, Rios's previous ship, what was it called? I can't remember. It's got a name that I can't ever remember.
You're talking about the...
with the captain and everything like that.
USS Mirage? Right.
Imran Majid.
I know who... Imran Majid, yeah. That's
Imran Majid, yeah. Yes.
Arabic navigator. That's who he's supposed to be.
Right. It was named after a navigator. And I just haven't committed it to memory yet. I will. It's only a matter of time. But yeah, I think that... What happened was, obviously, the Romulans got a hold of the data from that ship, probably through O. And if so, then they know to some degree that someone who looks like one of those, because they had a...
They had the drawing of the Soji bot.
Forgetting about Ramda.
Ramda the Romulan.
She had premonitions about Soji.
That's right. She saw Soji's future.
So,
but she was also Borg at the time, so it doesn't matter.
But it does matter. What matters is that the Romulans who were assimilated, who then were XB, all have these weird after effects. They're all kind of mentally challenged now, and they had Ramda. So she must have had some kind of weird connection with this signal or something, and that's got to be where they're getting their information.
Well, no, so the Rios's old ship met with this sense. They told them they were sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, no, they didn't say they were sense.
They told them they were sense. Yes, they did. Beautiful Flower and the Soji clone, and then they called. They were telling them about. They called O about the first contact mission. O ordered the captain to murder them because they were sense. They have their beam over logs or whatever, so they know what they look like.
No, they pieced that together last episode. They didn't know that he didn't know they were sense.
Rios didn't know, but the captain. No, I think
the captain knew.
The captain knew because the captain presumably was the one that killed them.
He knew.
Well, yeah, well, that's why O told him to kill him, because otherwise O wouldn't have told them to kill him and done that whole like clandestine black flag operation. So this is what has to have happened for any of this to make sense. They announced they were androids. O was told by the captain that we've made first contact with androids. O says murder the androids at all costs or we'll destroy your ship. Rios has the drawing of them, and there's logs on the Ibn Majid of the Soji look like. I don't remember which one, Arya or whatever, who was on the Ibn Majid that beamed over. They've got logs of her, what she looks like, the security cameras on the ship. Right. O's got that. She gave it to the Romulans, and so anyone that looks like that will go after it. So that answers my question. We figured it out. That's one question.
Right. I mean, I am looking through a rundown of that episode now, broken pieces, to try to see, because I swear that he said they were
synthetic,
and that was why the captain was working on I can do this, but then he decided that he couldn't, and that's why he killed himself.
I don't know. I disagree. I think he felt that his captain did something so anti Starfleet that he felt personally betrayed by his captain, but also he had such a connection with the man that he just went along with what he was doing, and that's why he made it seem like peaches and cream.
No, but he knew Starfleet was going to destroy the whole ship. He told Rafi that. So I mean, like,
okay,
he knows about
so
the whole
looking
thing.
Looking back into this, the way that it's written on Memory Alpha is that that Vandemir, it says Rios says he used to pretend Vandemir was his father, etc., etc., etc. Okay, gotcha. But then he explains that while patrolling the Vayet sector, the Even Magid picked up a small ship of unknown origin with two passengers and alerted Starfleet of a first contact. They beamed the two beings aboard, the ambassador, Blue Beautiful Flower, and his young aide, Janna. They shake hands and sit down to eat, before Vandemir killed them both with phasers. Rios reveals that Vandemir had received a black flag directive straight from Starfleet security, and if Vandemir disobeyed, Starfleet would destroy the Even Magid with all hands. So Rios confronted his captain, who then put the phaser in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And then Rios covered everything up.
So he did not know.
So you're right. I'm with Holly on this one. He didn't know. She's right. I mean, because there's no way he knew.
Yeah. Because he was aghast when he saw Soji.
But O did. Because there's no other way that they would have issued.
Yeah,
O gave the order. Right. But now this makes no sense.
Why? Well, no.
How does that totally make sense? Everything
still.
For you, David.
First contact. Yeah. I mean, if first contact, how do you make first contact and just get immediately told to kill them unless you know their sense? How does anyone know this?
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So clearly, O figured it out and told him to kill them both.
Bad writing. Don't buy it. Don't buy it.
I like the fact that it was okay as long as they figured it out on the ship, but it's not okay if security figures it out.
Security's far away. How the hell would they know anything about what's happening?
How do they send a black flag of directive?
And why did she not just ask where they were from and go annihilate the planet then?
Bad writing?
Now, that's the one. I mean, I get the feeling, though, that this group of androids was somewhere else, and probably what happened was they wiped them out before they could say anything.
Well, I mean, but they weren't, because on the planet, the girl gets the flower. I mean, the thing through her eye. She's the one who says that the only ship, one of them say the only ship Beautiful Flower and Janna took.
Yeah.
So they weren't from a different place. They were all from the same.
No, it doesn't mean, they know where they came from.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that probably what had happened after that.
They could have just scanned the computer of the ship since, you know, they just murdered the two people.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying is I think that what happened after that was that the Jat Vash got really ticked off at O for having him kill them off before that she could figure out where they could figure out where the homeworld was. And so then it's taken this entire time for them to finally find out where the home world was. That's my thought.
Yeah. Well, do you have any other thoughts?
It's so convoluted. They've had so much time to explain this, and they've not bothered.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that doesn't need to be explained, but I also think that's kind of like just a background part of the story. It's not the full.
Yeah, I don't think that's. Story.
No, but I mean, it's just one of many, many, many things that they're just like glossed over, and it's just like, okay, this is how it is, but with no real explanation. There's honestly lots of things like that.
Other than us extrapolating why Soji and Daj were out there and put out in the world with no memories of what was going on, it's not really well explained. I'm hoping in the next episode or so they'll start saying what.
There's no time.
The real reason.
So I'm thinking it's a little more cynical. And I only thought of this because of a couple of things you guys had said, but it's, you know, someone had mentioned that perhaps just Soji and Daj were made of data.
Yeah. Well, I mean, or maybe the other ones too were,
maybe some of them were, but maybe they were so different that Maddox felt he needed to get them away from them. maybe he, you know, Dr. Soon, he's like, oh, Maddox, he was on the verge of, you know, he made some questionable decisions, and he kind of made him sound like a bad guy, but he was also praising him in the same sentence. So, like, it made me uneasy. But anyway, and then he's so 100% on track with Sutra, who is like, we're going to kill everyone. And he's, like, okay with it. And I don't know if you guys noticed it, but he's not the leader here. Sutra is. Right.
Sutra is.
Yeah. She is. And so I'm thinking maybe Maddox knew that she was bad news and that he wanted a better life for Daj and Soji. And maybe they were put there on a mission that the other synths don't know about. And granted, you can't answer this in one other episode. It would have to be like built up into this and shown like way later on.
But the thing is, Holly, they've had 6 episodes before the ball got rolling where all these interesting things could have been discussed or hinted at more, and instead they just used them to, like, ask more questions instead of answering any of the ones they decided to start asking early on.
Well, that really doesn't have anything to do with what I just said. You're just distracting me.
Well, it's just the overall point.
I don't know. Here's my thing. I'm a major Trekkie because there are so many episodes that I will sit there and I have to, like, really crunch it, right? I mean, I think about things like Darmok, right, where I had to, like, think of – I spent so many hours trying to think of how the children learn language if everything is by analogy, right? I mean, these things make me think.
Lots of and YouTube. In the same, lots right, of YouTube.
Well, no, actually, this is – you know, a while back. So when I was thinking this through. But, I mean, the point is that if nothing else, we're all sitting here going into this deep dive on this, and that's fun to me. I mean, so I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing that they didn't hand everything to us on a platter. I kind of like the fact that I'm thinking this through and going, why is Soji out there? I mean, why is Dajin? So why were they out there? You know, how could this all work? And that there's enough fabric that we can start putting stuff together means that, yeah, they have been laying down enough little pieces through this entire thing to make this work, that we can pull the threads. So I hear a lot of people say that there's some bad writing in this, and I'm actually sitting there going, I don't really see the bad writing necessarily. Yeah. I mean, I can see that maybe they cut some scenes that were critical, and that might have been bad editing or bad directing, but I mean, whenever I see, like, discussions with Chabon online, he has this whole story in his head. It's all there because they ask him questions and he has instant responses on where everything is, and they're so embedded that he's able to be cagey about things without giving away too much.
But Guy, the first 7 episodes were being cagey without giving away too much.
Yeah. And like I said, that might have been a choice of anybody. But it could have been a director. It could have been an editor.
Could have been the network.
Network. It's just mind-boggling to spend that much time hiding the plot away from the audience. And then they reveal the plot in episode 8. And then we've got 2 episodes to wrap it up. Which was my fear all along.
Some of us like to try and figure out the plot before it's revealed to us.
Well, but not
there was
just that.
There was no hints that there was going to be this until episode 8. Like, it just, they didn't drop it.
Yeah, but Dave, obviously they're moving into the next season too. So, I mean, there's more going to be to reveal or to talk about.
If coronavirus doesn't kill Picard, I mean, Patrick Stewart.
So,
and all the other people on the show. But I mean, like, it's a real possibility. We're in a crazy time right now.
Sure.
I'm not saying that I said that there was going to be another supreme AI that's going to come and take over, but I have said that I don't think that Destroyer is what the Romulans really believe. It could be a Destroyer of something else. She could save her people and they might consider it destruction, or she could destroy the Romulans and save her people. We've talked about this.
Right.
It's the same knowledge from the AI. It's like it's the destroyer of all intelligent life forms. It's very clear at that.
I don't think it was all intelligent life forms, but still.
Well, that was the threat in Discovery season 2.
I don't think it was out of the blue. I don't think it was out of the blue.
That was the threat in Discovery season 2, and the sphere.
We're not watching Discovery.
I understand that, but the sphere has all the information from everything, so the sphere probably has knowledge of the ring, which is probably where the AI, which is probably why the AI wanted to control and become a better AI. I mean, it's all connected, and I think it's going to be. And I know
you're
we're not
watching
talking about,
Picard, and you're thinking about Discovery.
You have to.
Then you're not absorbing what's happening in Picard.
It's all connected.
I don't know if it is connected per se, but I mean, it's possible it is.
I mean, that's the point. It's the connected. They're definitely trying to connect the two series. And the thing is, Control was trying to eradicate all intelligent life, probably because it's just tripping on that directive of this other ancient race that is trying to destroy all life.
But didn't they take all the sphere data and shoot it into the future?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm saying the sphere data on AIs came from the ring, probably. Or the sphere was ancient. The sphere could have been around the last time the reaping happened and got out all this information about how the AI functions. Because the sphere is, we don't know what kind of life form it is. I mean,
right.
Yeah,
it was ancient. So, I mean, the sphere could have this data.
I get the feeling that Chabon would probably be linking to Discovery, but he wasn't part of the hardcore creative team on Discovery. He was just a side writer. So
I can't imagine
that there's all. I mean, I'm not sure that there's a lot of depth going on between that. I'm concerned about that.
But I mean, it's all under the purview of Kurtzman, and they're probably like, you've got to connect the series somehow. And like the AI was from the sphere was trying to wipe out all sentient life, and it's probably just jumping the gun on the artificial intelligence. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a very similar goal. It's just,
yeah. I mean, I could see the sphere being your reapers that you were talking about. You know what I mean? I could see
that. Well, sphere seems kind of benign.
I don't think the sphere is the reapers. I think the sphere has the data from the reapers on how to become AI, which is how the control was trying to get it. Because the sphere is ancient. It could have been around during the previous cycle. I don't know. I'm trying to connect all the dots.
I see.
I'm like the picture of Charlie with like all the pictures and the lines, and he's like smoking a cigarette. And he's got beard and his tie's undone. Like this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to connect all.
Well,
the
let
dots.
Me give you one more, Dave.
Yes,
I'm going to give you another more. So, the title of this episode, the Ite Acaridia Ergo, is a painting. It's been multiple paintings, actually, but the one famous is by Nicholas Poussin, and it's basically these shepherds are surrounding come upon a crypt or a tomb, and there's a woman standing above it, and one of the shepherds are pointing to the inscription, the Ite Acaridia Ergo. So the painting is it's in the Louvre. It's a famous painting. But it's also deeply put into a bunch of conspiracy and thoughts of like Knights Templar and stuff like that. So there's a whole like backstory. In fact, some of that stuff is actually put into the Da Vinci Code. If you've ever read the book or
I remember that. Mm-hmm.
So there's a story of a priest that in France. That found some old parchments, and they came upon all this like information that's linked to this painting, and this painting is supposed to link to the actual tomb of Christ. And it's like really crazy if you get into it. I've done some reading on it. It's like it's totally insane, but it's very interesting. And I guess if you change this, Acaridia Ergo. It's an anagram that you can change it, and it's in Latin, and the translation is Begone, I Conceal the Secrets of God. So there's a lot more going on, I think, with this title, and I think Chabon and whoever else is writing, if you look into this, you might get some more information of maybe where they're going.
Hmm.
Yeah. I feel like when I keep hearing Siobhan talking about this. This is level upon level upon level of conspiracy going on here.
Yeah, that's what Maddox said. It's lies within lies.
Right. So it's a Starfleet conspiracy. It's a Romulan conspiracy. All of these things are deeply, deeply embedded. And to address one of the things we had talked about before, I also feel like one of the biggest things that they're trying to pull here is that fear is like the worst enemy of them all.
Fear is the mind killer.
And so it is. And I think that that's what we've been laying in those first seven episodes was how much fear is in the galaxy at this point in time. Everybody's racked by fear. Everybody's locked down by fear. Yeah, but it's different fears. It's like we got a different fears from like the Kuat Malat. We've got a different fear from, you know, all of the different pieces that we've been to. Even Nepenthe had a little bit of this fear. Is what they're fearing. So the idea was to set up this structure of fear that's going on that has changed and altered the Federation that we know and love and made it into something different. And so that's what I get is the entire point of this, you know, is that they're trying to make it so that you can see the world as it has changed. One of the things that all the people are complaining about is how dark and dismal it is. Well, yeah, that's the point. That's where they're headed. That's what they're trying to do is set up. The Federation is not the same anymore. It's gripped by fear. And this is what's going on. So that's my feeling on this one. So,
granted, and that can be a compelling story, but I just felt like they were just doing things and it didn't seem super related. I mean, the fear, I guess, is the one thing that strings it all together. But I mean, I still have the feeling of the pacing issues. Like they could have been dropping a little bit more nuggets here and there to make it a little bit more interesting in the first half of the season.
There is one thing that I am noticing happens a lot with this newer group of writers, and that is it seems like they're I almost want to say that they're over world building. As a writer, as a storyteller, I'm spending a lot of time. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, maybe I'm projecting here. What do you think?
I think I'm projecting.
But I mean, I think what happens is they set up this plot that is 27 levels deep and 60 feet wide and 20 feet long, and then they can only show so much of it. And so they end up trying to figure out what's the key pieces that need to be said here. And I think what happens is they're really good at world building, and they really suck at editing that down.
I mean,
because I feel like that happened with Discovery as well. We had some phenomenally good world building and structure, and then it's like they kept dumping pieces of it and dropping pieces of it. And I'm like, oh, you left that piece, and that was our great piece. And now you're heading over here, and you're dropping that piece, too. And I mean, it's not a bad thing. I mean, necessarily. I mean, obviously, it's not a good thing. I think it's unique. We've never had that before as Trekkies.
I think Star Trek Picard's doing a way better job world building than Discovery did, because Discovery just glosses over things. I mean, like, they both gloss over things an awful lot. But the thing is, like, and I give the writers an A+ on world building, because if you look into all the names of things, they have significant meaning, and it's kind of brilliant how they're using all these names. But the thing is, it's lost upon anyone who doesn't decide to do the research and read up, what does this name mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? It is going to be lost upon the general viewer. So world building that's lost upon the general viewer that doesn't research any of this stuff isn't helpful.
I don't know, but I mean, Star Trek has done that for years and years. They've dropped things and cultural meanings that maybe the common audience would know until they come across it or they look it up. So
sure. I concur.
I agree. They have been doing that all along. But in a series that's supposed to be one long movie, and Aaron and I, we've been asking, what's the point? For like, we asked it every single episode, for like the first six episodes before they started moving things along. It's just like, I don't know.
So the first three episodes were Act 1.
I know.
The second three episodes were Act Two.
All 10 episodes are Act One. I think Season Two is going to be Act Two, and Season Three, if they get it, will be Act Three.
Well, I'm actually quoting Siobhan this one. So, I mean, he literally said the first three episodes were Act One. We set everything up. The second three episodes were the complication to the plot, Act Two. And then the third three episodes, or in this case, four, because I think they originally planned nine, but then they got an extension. The last four episodes are wrapping up the plot, Act Three. So he's trying to put it up in a three-act play. And I mean, he actually said that in a, I don't know whether I read that or heard it in a podcast, but that's his battle plan.
That's so bizarre, because they didn't reveal the plot until Act Three.
Well, they were revealing the plot early on, because the plot is get Soji home. That was the plot. And then they complicated it in Act Two. So that's part of the problem, was that everything got more messed up in Act Two, which is the way most stories go. Act Two is, we screw up our plot. And then Act Three is resolve everything.
But so, Act Three has been a reveal. We're finally learning things.
Right. Well, that's resolving. A reveal is a resolving. In a mystery story, that's how you would do it. But your Act Three in the mystery would be a reveal.
But the thing is, they're revealing stuff, but the reveal is only bringing up more questions.
Well, it is now, but I mean, we still have an episode left.
We do.
So, I mean, they may be, I mean, right now, really, I think the burning question was, why Soji and Daj from this particular thing? Why did they send them out? That could be answered with one line. So that doesn't need a whole lot. And honestly, I don't think it needs to be answered. I'd like to know it, but it doesn't need to resolve the plot, because now we've got the high tension here that we need to try to figure out how to get out of. So I see that. It's just a thought.
I mean,
well,
yeah, I mean,
obviously, I don't know. I've come to the conclusion that there's not much that's going to satisfy you with some of these stories.
I thought we were in the same boat for a lot of this, Aaron.
I think there's some things here that I think this is better constructed than Discovery. I think the plot has obviously moved way too slow to get to where we are, and there could have been better. I think a lot of this could have been boiled down to maybe about 4 to 5 shows.
I completely agree. That's what I've been saying, and I agree with you on everything you've said. And I said the world building is definitely way better in Picard. It's just so much of it's hidden.
And there's stuff that, I mean, obviously we're just not going to, I mean, honestly, if you watch even Next Gen, like a really like crazy, like if you watch Conspiracy from, what is that, Season 1 or Season 2?
God, I wish there was more of that.
I mean, that moves along so fast, and you're like, how could they? I mean, obviously, they say, well, you know, Enterprise was out in deep space, and there's no way they would have known any of the stuff was going on. But still, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you could say, like, you could pick that episode apart quite quickly, I would think, you know, under these lenses. So I think we're expecting a really high watermark for this.
Yeah.
And I think they're hitting it for most part. I don't love everything about it. I think you know, I mean, obviously I hate Narek just because his character is so cliche. Nerissa Rizzo is just like, just such a two-dimensional character. Yeah, it's a boring character. So there's cool things, of course, but there's other things I'm just like, yeah, you could have done a little better. So,
absolutely.
That's sort of where I am too. I feel like when they set this up, you know, when they originally set this up, the whole concept, and the part of this is that I'm kind of disappointed that clearly this was in Chabon's mind, but he couldn't get it moving. Because one of the things they were really working on was the TNG concept that the bad guys aren't just bad guys. They've got a reason. They've got a concept, and they believe that they're right. But then he generates Romulans that ended up being flat. I'm much more interested in Laris and what's her name?
Sutra?
The first
Zavon.
Zavon. Zaban and Laris.
Oh yeah,
the first two Romulans we met in the first, they are much deeper and interesting characters than our bad guys, you know, or even for that matter, Commodore O. I mean, Commodore O doesn't, which is a shame because I loved Tamlin Tamita. I loved her when she was in Babylon 5. And I loved her even with, I had a crush on her when she was in Karate Kid, which is why I'm making that reference. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that was an ancient
movie. Only you would know ago. That because I had no memory that she was in that movie.
Yeah, she was the love interest in Karate Kid 2.
Ooh.
So
that's great.
Anyway, but she was also in the first season of Babylon 5.
Yes.
And I was so excited when she was in the first season of Babylon 5. Then they all decided she was just too rigid and too rough. And so they decided to get rid of her in favor of Ivanova. I liked Ivanova. She was fine, but I got kind of sad they got rid of Tamla Tamita's character. But even now we've got O, and she's flat. I mean, they're just all flat. They're just all like single-minded, kill all the androids. And I think that's part of why I didn't like this. We've got a couple of Deus Ex Machinas. For those of you who do not know, like, story speak, Deus Ex Machina is the machine of God. So it's the, you know, our hero's falling off the cliff, and there are a bunch of bad guys at the bottom to shoot him. Will he survive? And in the next episode, a UFO comes along and picks him up and takes him away. And you're like, what? What?
Doesn't that happen in Life of Brian?
Yeah, I mean, that, right. A lot of things happen in Monty Python, I've noticed. But they do it as an irony.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's sort of my thing, is like, I feel like when we get to this episode, we're here, and we've got a lot of pieces going on, and then we've got Deus Ex Machina. We've got, well, you know, this, we've got the Borg cube, but there's just going to be 217 warbirds, so yeah, you're screwed. And then it's kind of a flat threat. We've got 217 warbirds. We could call in the androids, but they'll wipe
it. It's sort of just like this wall of threat, and there's no like personality to it.
Suddenly, so to some degree, I'm actually on board with what David's saying. We've been going along and going along and going along with small threat. And then all of a sudden with this episode, we've got a wall on both sides of super threat, like galaxy-ripping super threat. And it's like, that clearly, I have to agree with David on this one. That could have been telegraphed a little bit more, and I would have been happy.
I think if it was telegraphed a little bit more, like the sense of urgency would have been like through the roof. Like saving one person, like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Data's daughter, that's okay. But like this galaxy changing thing would have been like a little bit more mind blowing and a little bit more like, what the fuck? We gotta get, what's gonna happen? How do we fix this? How do you stop Armageddon? And they weren't even asking that question until episode 9.
Right.
And so, like, I mean, this is stuff that should be asked early on.
Now, I think that they ramped up the level right at the end to like 15. All of a sudden, you know, we were running with a threat level of, you know, 5 or 6 for a long time.
Like 3 or 4.
And then, yeah, I mean, not even really that high of a threat. And I actually, unlike you guys, I was enjoying this slower ride. I actually was.
I was on that ride too.
Yeah, I was enjoying the heck out of it. It was fine. I didn't have any problem with it. And then all of a sudden we went to from like 5 to 15. And I feel like that's part of why this episode's bothering me a little. But understand that even then, I feel like I agree with Aaron on this one that, you know, this is better than Discovery. So it's clear that these guys are super nerds and they're hardcore Trekkies. They build these elaborate worlds, and then they can't use all of it. So they have to cut them down.
And they won't ever get to, because Michael Chabon isn't on Picard Season 2. So it's just like, who's going to pick up that mantle? Did he leave notes? Is the next showrunner going to care? Like,
right.
It's just going to be...
Well, that's what we had with Discovery, because that's exactly what happened with Discovery.
It happened three times in the first season, which is why the first season is so disjointed. And it's just like, oh no, why are we doing this again with Picard? Can't we have one unified vision for once, please, for the love of God?
Yeah, I mean, Picard is beautiful in that it is extraordinarily internally consistent. It's working really well together. But yeah, I feel like there's pieces of this that got missed that are on the cutting room floor somewhere that we'll all go, why didn't you put that into episode four? Why? But I think you're right, David. I think part of it would be that if we knew that the threat was 15 from episode two, then you'd have a fleet of defiance with them right now.
Absolutely.
You know, there'd be 300 defiance flying around, swarming the La Serena. And so,
I mean, like there was no gradual ramp. I mean, from the second episode, I guess we got like, oh, she's the destroyer, but it's so vague, it's meaningless.
Right.
Which is what Holly was saying. It could mean the destroyer of anything, and it could be this, it could be that. But now we know it's the destroyer of all sentient life, just like the AI from Discovery. So it's just like they didn't. It's like we're cruising along on a flat line, and then all of a sudden it juts up to 15.
Right. Like I said. If they had just backed off a little, I would have found it intriguing and fascinating if the destroyer that came down only wiped out the Romulans. Then Picard is sitting there going, now, wait a minute. And they'd be like, but what? Why do you care? You don't have a dog in this race. We're only going to wipe out the Romulans. And then, you know, it'd be Picard going, now, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that would have been interesting if they, because that would have been a 10. I could have accepted a 5 to a 10, you know?
Yeah.
Holly's trying to say something, I think.
Yeah. I haven't said any of my thoughts yet.
Oh.
I thought you said
hey,
you
Holly.
You said you didn't
Holly,
have any.
Would you like to join our discussion? I'm sorry.
There are only a couple of things, and I have had so many opportunities to kind of throw them into conversation. But you guys are having a great conversation, and I'm enjoying listening. I'm kind of also cringing listening.
Cringy listening.
Cringe listening is a thing. It's like binge watching.
It's a thing. Sometimes you just have to listen. So as far, I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know if I'm the only person that thought of this, but Sutra's sister is also dead. And when Ramda throws out her premonition to Soji, she's like, you're the one who lived. You're the destroyer.
Right.
But Sutra is also a sister who lived.
Yeah.
And she's clearly evil.
Right.
So... Well,
I don't think Sutra is the destroyer.
Well, I don't either. I wouldn't say I don't, but I don't know either. I think there's a possibility that it's not Soji.
I think it could be Sutra.
Now, I also...
She's the one who's got the frequency. She's the one who's got the frequency, so it probably will be, unless she shared it with everyone.
That's true.
And everyone's got the frequency now, so it could be any of them.
I don't think anybody else. I think she's going to use it to manipulate the others to follow her. Because nobody else knows. And she wanted to get rid of fucking Jurati. And she's the only other person who knows. So I don't know.
Jurati doesn't know. Jurati couldn't piece it together. Only person who knows the signal for sure is Sutra, and she may have told Soji. And it looks like she has told Soji, because Picard's trying to persuade Soji not to send the signal in the preview.
When she did the Vulcan mind meld, Jurati was present and aware of everything that she was seeing.
That's true. I thought they said later she didn't. I'm pretty sure they said later she didn't understand that she doesn't understand it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, I that was said.
But isn't this like a game of telephone? Because you got from Commodore O to Girardi and then to Sutra.
She was
things could be lost in translation.
she finally heard what the message was actually saying, and she is so convicted that she's ready to die for the destruction of the rest of the world.
I don't think so. I think
she knows.
She's playing. I don't think she knows. I'm pretty sure they said that she doesn't understand it, and that only Sutra was able to put it together the right way.
I don't think they said that, but I do agree that maybe she's playing, because something that I had written, you know, when I talked about trying to find things that I liked about this episode, Jurati was one of the things that I wasn't sure I really liked. I disliked her here and there battle in this episode. You know, one moment it was like, okay, Jurati, we know we don't like you. And then you're like, oh, we're so sympathetic. We feel for you. And then we're like, oh, you're such an innocent little thing. Oh, wait, yeah, you killed Maddox. So it was a lot of back and forth with Jurati's character in this episode. I liked that, but I also, it just made me dislike the character more. There were also other character things. Well, alone. Yeah. Yeah.
She's the killer of men.
There were some other character things that I enjoyed. I guess the most thing I enjoyed about this episode were the characters. I liked seeing Rios excited about flying through the conduit and getting to Capellan. He seemed extremely marveled at the planet. It was really cool to see another, like an actual emotional connection from him, mm-hmm. Which you again see with Jurati at the end of the episode. I felt like Rafi wasn't high. I felt like she was kind of on the ball this episode. And
yeah.
So
which makes sense.
I felt like,
yeah.
Well, the replicator's been turned off for her since last episode. Yeah.
So I really liked seeing that other side of her. She seems really with it. Obviously I love Elnor and I just love him. He's just so great.
Yeah, Elnor's the awesomest.
He's the awesomest. Narek is just this squirrely, dumb fucking self. I can't stand Narek. I think it's important to understand that in this episode, Soji is starting to search through herself. She's trying to connect with her people and her crew, well, Picard at least, to really try to find the answers that she's looking for. You know, she's pondering life and existence and death. And I liked to see that because we are forced to acknowledge that this android is like 3 years old.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't understand. Naive. Yeah. But she still thinks of these very big she's got these big things on her shoulders, and so I really did enjoy that. And obviously Picard, he just comes into himself, I think, in this episode. All the other episodes were like, oh, he's so fragile, and oh, he's so quiet, and oh, he's so held back. And I just think he really came into himself in this episode.
I kind of agree, because it seems like a lot of Picard, other than once in a while he comes in with his like little speech or his ideas that he puts on people, he seems muted compared to the rest of the characters.
Yeah.
And he kind of takes a back seat a lot. I mean, other than a couple spots where he spins into action. So,
well, all the other characters have had these plot lines, these side plots in all these
big
other
plot
episodes.
Lines, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, granted, he's the driving force behind the mission. He's kind of been behind the mission. And we've really only seen the forefront of that. So this episode, we were forced to kind of look at that too.
Yeah.
About his role and his actual passion behind the mission. It wasn't just, I'm tired of sitting on the couch waiting to die. It's like, I've got to go. I've got to do this. This is important.
Right.
And you see that. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of voiced all my other opinions except for one. And this thought came to me because when they did the recap of last week's, well, pretty much the entire season, but last week's episode, you know, 7 of 9 is going back to a place that she's not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And And at first, my very first thing I wrote down was, you know, could Seven be the Destroyer? Like, she couldn't be the Destroyer, right? And then at the end of this episode, you know, going right back to that was, could she be... could Sorry. She be... That's okay. Could she be the bridge between the humans and the synthetics?
It's possible.
So, that's pretty much all I had thought of. You know, I did enjoy the episode. I really did. And I'm ready to binge watch the entire season before part two. I'm ready. And I might have something else to say, but...
Yeah, I might try to binge the whole season before part two also.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's a lot of that's a lot of time, though. Well, I guess everyone has time now, right? More time than usual.
More time than usual. The joys of working from home.
Unless you still have to go to work like me.
Right? Or me, apparently. I didn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happened.
Well, there's one thing I'm super, super glad of that since we were finally told what the Romulan revelation was. I'm so glad that the Romulans are not involved with creating the Borg, because that was a fan theory being spun around a lot online, and I was like, oh my god, I hope it's not true. I hope it's not true, and it looks like it definitely isn't true, so thank god. Thank god, writers. Thank you, Michael Chabon, for not doing that one.
Thank god. So one of the things, actually, Holly said that made me think, I think that's part of what was loaded up on this episode that was so, or the series, this movie, this 10-hour movie, is I think that they are setting up all of the crew of the ship. So they had to go through, okay, before we get to the plot of our story, let's real quickly show where this guy came from and where that guy came from.
Their faults. And,
yeah, let's get all these people together because you're going to have to deal with them next season as the crew of the La Serena. So I get
as the crew of the Borg cube.
Of the crew of the Borg cube. So I think that that's now that she mentions it, I agree totally with her. I think that's part of what's going on. And so that's what bogged down all of it. They had to kill plot for it. You know, right. Oh gosh, we could tell you a little bit about the plot of this series, but we've got to go to Elnor's homeworld so you can see where he's from. So right. That next season, when he's killing everybody left and right with a sword, you won't see where that come from.
Right. True. I still think them going to get Elnor was a tremendous waste of time, because Picard has two Romulans that are way more useful and way more worldwise and just as deadly, because there's two of them and they don't use swords. That's for
redemption and it fits. And I'm okay
with
that.
Sure. Think about it.
But like, they're way more useful than Elnor.
Yeah, but those two deserved to retire and take over his family's vineyard.
They've been retiring for the past 12 years.
Right.
But that's what it was something that Picard could do for them that needed to happen.
It's fine, but they're way more interesting characters than Elnor. And all the goodbyes.
I love you, shut your mouth.
All the goodbyes and all the stuff with Elnor have been not earned, because Elnor and Picard have barely had any scenes together since the first episode they were together, and they haven't earned all these like tearful goodbyes and all this stuff like that. It's not earned. They haven't rebuilt that connection.
Well, they knew each other as kids. I disagree.
Yeah, you don't just see the only time that Elnor has ever interacted with Picard as a child. It was clear in that episode that Picard has been coming there for years.
Yeah, before he decided not to go there anymore. But even then, I mean, I'm on board with you. I'm on your side here, Holly. in this case, I agree. Elnor is a redemption story. That Picard picked up Elnor because he should have picked up Elnor 15 years ago and didn't, and abandoned Elnor when he really shouldn't have. He's picking... This whole thing is about Picard going, you know what? I was an idiot. I should have been doing the right thing, and I spent 15 years not. So Elnor makes total sense. I get that. And the fact that Elnor is tearing up, that's because of absolute candor. Yeah. I mean, like, one of the best scenes ever was Elnor killing everything known to man and then seeing Seven of Nine and hugging her.
Right? Yeah.
That was such an awesome scene, because that's what I would do if I wasn't doing the manly man macho thing, which, yeah, you know, our society keeps putting on me and putting on my shoulders. I totally would have hugged her. I was like, thank you for saving me. You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I mean, like, I don't dislike Elnor. Elnor's fun. He's the comic relief because he's so unversed in the world.
Aloof is the word.
But just from a plot perspective, other than, I mean, putting aside Picard's redemption arc because he's fucked up so much the last 15 years, from a useful standpoint, they are definitely more useful to have brought with them than some random...
I actually had wondered why...
You go first.
Oh, I was just going to say, I thought they were going to put... Laris and who's the male? I can't remember his name.
I can't remember.
I thought Laris was
Zaban.
Zaban.
Yeah.
I thought for sure that Laris was going to make Zaban go.
That would have been great. I would have loved one of them. Because they're great characters. I love them. They spent two episodes setting them up and they took them away. I'm like, oh, I liked them.
I don't think they set them up to take them away. I think they were just rich. I wanted to quickly touch on Narek, my opinion on Narek.
Wait.
You
have to acknowledge, David, that Picard is very closed off and not emotional. He does not say everything he thinks. He's very political. And you have Elnor, who is very open, very candid, and that was necessary to show Picard's development throughout this season.
I agree.
I can take it or leave it.
You could.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, I think you're right. One thing I have to give these guys such wonderful credit for is they picked up on a thread of the character of Picard that I don't think anybody wrote, but existed. And that's really cool. This thread of, like, that last poker game. And I think it was just an accident that they never put the captain in the poker game. You know what I mean? I think that wasn't intentional until All Good Things, when he said, I should have done this years ago. And you realize he doesn't actually...
He doesn't have
a camaraderie. He doesn't have a group of people he just hangs with because they're his buddies. He doesn't. And so now you have him in failure mode, and he walked away from everybody and just said, screw it, I'm not messing with any of you people. And everybody's pissed at him because they were all relying on him. And I think that when you look at Elnor, that's key. Because Elnor is a literal example of that. Like a literal embodiment of, you abandoned me when I needed you.
Right.
And you didn't help me.
Yeah.
And that's what his whole point in the story is to be the reminder that Picard abandoned people when they needed him most.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure everyone has told him that every episode of the season so far.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, telling somebody that and being a physical reminder of that are completely different.
Sure. I'm just playing devil's advocate because that's pretty much my job.
Right. that's fair. But on the same token, I feel like Elnor, the other part of this is that Elnor has just said, okay, I'm really ticked at you. Okay, I'm over it. Because absolute candor. He just is exactly, he wears everything on his sleeve. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got his heart on his sleeve. So he's like, I'm really mad at you. I hate you. Okay, I'm done. You know what I mean?
Love and respect yeah. you. And yeah, absolutely everything is out in the open with him.
I think we've killed Aaron.
I mean, everyone's got their own opinion. My feeling is that, you know, I still feel the same way. I think this is a really good show. I think there's a lot going on here. I think the pacing's been off in the first couple, five, six episodes. But other than that, you know, characters are great. people, I mean, I kind of do feel like Picard kind of just like pops up like once in a while, like he shows up and does something or he says something that's like, you know, wise. But then after that, it's like he just disappears, which kind of, you know, leaves me a little cold because it is called Star Trek Picard. So,
I agree.
I'm not really interested in Rios. I'm not really interested that much in Raffi or Girardi. I mean, yes, they're part of the, you know, it colors the story, but I'm not invested in them. And if the show was to go on without Picard, I don't know if I'd be that interested in any of these characters.
Unless so. Seven of Nine takes over, then I would be able to do it. I would be able to be as invested, or maybe even more invested, because like there was definitely
that would be a cool show.
There was definitely a passing of the torch thing where Seven was like save the galaxy, Picard. And Picard's like, that's your job now, and he leaves. And so I'm sure Elnor and Seven are gonna probably be the leads, maybe on season two. Hopefully, if they don't kill them.
I would be fine.
I mean, like, they kill Patrick Stewart or they put him in a synth body so Patrick Stewart cannot be on the show anymore, but you can still have Picard in the show.
He's a golem.
Yeah. It looks like Soji, but it's like Picard. So Soji could be a part of the show. And then she's Picard. Yeah. He gets to learn, like, what it's like to be a woman. And
right. That's where it goes into the X-rated territory. Right there.
Hey, there was a great Farscape episode where they switched bodies and he was so excited about being in a woman's body. He was like, woo!
I am excited that there has been cursing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have made this argument a number of times online about the cursing. So I feel like I have a little bit of a problem with it, only because in my mind's eye, my headcanon of this whole thing, they're not speaking English. They're speaking whatever is 24th century version of English, which, I mean, if you go back 300 years, English is a very hard language to understand. Old English is really rough. So you wouldn't understand it. So I feel like it would have evolved into something. So we're hearing a translation, you know, of what they're saying back into our version of English. Kind of like reading modern Shakespeare. You know, we've translated the Shakespeare up to modern English. But so it kind of breaks that veil a little bit, except that I can then re-canonize it by saying, well, okay, so maybe they're not really saying fuck. They're just saying, you know, bleeble blah, but that translates to, and so there, that sort of fits in my head canon.
But Admiral Clancy likes to throw out the F word every chance he gets.
I feel like those two have been friends. Or were friends, and they're no longer friends. Like, they were friends 15 years ago. I don't think they get along well.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but like adversaries, or maybe rough adversaries, and that's fine. but either way, I can actually accept that to some degree, because I know a lot of military people, and there's a lot of cursing. just not usually in their chain of command. so it's kind of a little weird.
Yeah, I think cursing would be fine in Star Trek, being on like the pirate side and the riffraff.
Right.
On
you're out in the riffraff. In the so chain that makes of
command, it was different because Spock was confused by it in Star Trek IV. So
right,
it doesn't fit in Starfleet because they've moved beyond that and they've become better. Cursing in Star Trek, in and of itself, not a problem. Just in the chain of command, a little weird.
That was a little. I agree with you, David.
And then Tilly being like, "Oh, that's so fucking cool," because they're playing her as like a autistic person or as like this eccentric, you know, that she doesn't have.
She's spectrum.
Yeah, she's on the spectrum. So like her saying it, and then Stamets being like, "Oh, it's okay. Yeah, it is fucking cool." Like,
right. That makes sense. I actually went with that too.
That instance was fine, but the chain of command using it so liberally was kind of weird. But cursing in Star Trek would be fine. Like, if it's like aliens, Ferengi, the riffraff, the smugglers, the Orions.
Yeah. I
mean, like that, it would make perfect sense.
With the context, I just feel like the way it's been used in Picard, at least with the Federation, you know, it's all been pointed at Picard, and he has pissed off a lot of people. He has been separated. He's known for standing up for his, you know, his point of view, and so they're just fucking tired of hearing him drone on about the same crap. So cursing at him is not really out of there. And think about, he lives in France anyway. They curse at each other all the time. All
fuck
the time.
You, fucking American.
All the time.
But I've also said that, you know, I think that, you know, everybody was like, this isn't Gene Roddenberry's vision. And I'm like, now let's be realistic here. You look at Gene Roddenberry's vision. If Gene Roddenberry were alive,
Troy
today,
would have three tits.
And they'd be exposed all the time.
Oh, yeah, all the clothes that fit around
because
him.
He was a major, like, I don't know. I mean, but that was his thing, was like naked women. He kept cutting, like, fabric off of the dresses of the actresses to make them just a little bit more revealing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so this would be just rife with nudity. So, to some degree, well, and I don't know. I feel like I'm on the fence on that one. I feel like that could go really bad. I think I'd be okay if, like, you had Orion Slave Girls. That fits. That
and
fits
Ferengi
their characters.
Women. Yeah, and Ferengi Weddings.
We even said that, right? And Beta Z Weddings. All of those three things would fit. If you had that in the show, okay, that fits. That's fine. But if you just had, like,
Klingon Rape.
You know, yeah, that also would be in it, too, sure. But, I mean, if you just had, like, random women wandering around naked, I'd be like, okay, really?
Well,
really?
It depends on the planet. Totally would have happened on the Justice World. Only reason they're wearing clothes is because they had to be censored then.
Yeah, Haven. Yeah, and then that makes sense, too, like I said. But actually, that's another good statement to the case that I'm making here. It's Haven and Justice and, oh, God, all of those were like that, right? I mean, even Code of Honor. Oof. Oh. I mean, really? I know.
Ouch.
Like, the naked now. Oh. I mean, but really, the truth is, the entire first season was done by Gene Roddenberry or overseen by him.
Yeah.
And you can totally see everything was all about sexy women with sexy very little clothing.
It was also like, kind of. I mean, it wasn't the time to put that on TV, but it was. That stuff was going on outside of television.
That's just a trope of science fiction. I mean, Buck Rogers, I was amazed at some of the lack of costuming they had on Buck Rogers. And that was, like, way earlier than Next Gen.
Yeah,
I was like,
I mean,
I was kind of amazed. I'm like, wow, that's kind
of
cool.
And you're absolutely right. There was a certain amount of that's just the nature of things. But, he was pushing the limits in the 60s. Because they weren't supposed to show navels. They weren't supposed to show belly buttons.
Yeah, so they cut all around the belly button.
But then in Mirror Mirror, he did. And the censors let it go. But it was a fight all the way down.
Oh, yeah.
And then it broke all the... Since they did it, since Nichelle Nichols had her belly button exposed, suddenly everybody else could have their belly button exposed.
Woo!
And so, belly like, it was like us. A thing. It's like, oh, it's so rough. I mean, it's like, it's a thing. But the point that I'm trying to get at is it's not un-Roddenberry-like to add the things into Star Trek that
people
are, you know, forbidden, because he would have had naked women all over the place.
Absolutely. if he was on, if Star Trek aired on HBO instead of syndication.
Yeah. Yar would have been naked half the time. Troy would have been naked half the time. I mean, it would just been horrible.
Like it would have been fantastic. It would have been fantastic. What are you talking about, guy?
Okay. Yeah, okay. You could go that way.
Glorious.
I mean, nudity has its place.
Yes.
There is a place for it and a time for it. I feel like Roddenberry would have gone way past that line.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Turned around and never looked back. You know?
Yeehaw, Cowboys.
He would have brought back a Delton, and so we'd just have a bald girl that was naked all the time.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, God.
Absolutely.
He was totally into free love, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys,
cheating on his wife.
Yes, exactly. Guys, we have, I think, exhausted the subject and gone into weird territory.
Weeds. We went into the weeds.
Far into the weeds. Let's wrap this episode up.
It's like we're talking about it like it's the finale, and it's not. It's going to be another long episode next week, most likely.
Oh, absolutely. There'll be more to talk about, and there'll probably be a cliffhanger at the end, so we'll see what happens. Guy, let's everyone in the audience know where they can find your stuff, what you do.
Well, you can find me pretty much everywhere on social media, at GSDavisArt. I'm on Facebook at GS Davis Art. I'm on Twitter, and I don't post a lot on Twitter, but I am on Instagram. But in this entire time while we're all locked down, I've been doing extra stuff to kind of keep people entertained. So I've been doing my Springs comic for a little while because I think that humor is a good thing to have. And my Springs comic is cute and about robots. So you can find that on my Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/GS Davis Art. And I'm also world building for people who want to become my patron at patreon.com/GS Davis Art. You can find me doing videos about building the world for Bellatrix Rising. So that's one of the things that I'm doing right now. And that's where you can find me.
Awesome.
Well, you can also find me. Hang on real quick. I'm sorry. I forgot about Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. I do my own show, Geek Tank, and I should say something about it. Otherwise, they're going to kill me. Have you met Chelsea? She'll kill me.
Do they listen? Maybe they won't know.
Right, that's true. She's very, very outspoken. I think she'd kill me loudly. Mm. And then tape it and then publish that as part of Geek Tank. The Geek Tank Special Edition. Guy dies. That's Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and you can find that everywhere we do. We're also producing extra content while we're sequestered so that we can keep you guys entertained. So you can find either one of those locations. So.
Awesome. Very nice. Well, always a pleasure to have you and all your thoughts that come along with Star Trek, because I know you're always brimming with thoughts, Guy.
I thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's good. It's a good conversation. For us, you can find us, obviously, at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@Yahoo.com. Please join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. And there's lots of people talking about all sorts of things Picard right now. So come and join there. You can tweet us at Synthaholic Duo and let us know what's going on in your world there. And if you feel like this show is something you want to support, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics, and donate there and help the show. And as always, just an easy way to support the show is just by sharing or word of mouth to your friends, your neighbors, even though you can't probably go out right now because of things happening in the world.
Virusy stuff.
Virusy stuff. So anyway, next week we get the conclusion of season one. Very exciting to see how this all wraps up, or how they decide to wrap this up, or if this will be a cliffhanger, which I'm betting on. So, guys, I guess we will all see.
Absolutely. Next week. All right.
Well, Holly and Dave, lots of fun talking, lots of different thoughts, lots of different arguments on what we think is happening here. So,
absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Guy. And as always, live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We're just making up for only going an hour last week.
Yeah, what? How long is this one?
I've been on the call for 2 hours and 20 minutes.
2 hours and 7 minutes is what my call recorder says.
Hold on, Michael.
That's almost as long as you and Guy's episode.
So it's you know that I'm by yourself. I'm wondering what the common thread here is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, there's a mirror right there. Oh, geez. So
well, I really enjoyed talking to you guys. Michael just called me, and I have not talked to him, like, actually in almost 24 hours, so I'm going to get off.
All right, okay. Have fun.
And awesome. Thank you, Holly. I'm sorry I talked over you a couple of times.
No, it's fine. It's hard. It's easier when we're all in the same room. So, actually, no, it was great, and, you know, I hope I didn't overstep on you, because sometimes you kind of have to go, hey, stop talking.
I love that. I'm like, oh, wait, there's somebody else talking. Oh, crap, I should probably stop talking.
Yeah.
So
I thought this was the first time we really got deep in the weeds, like really good, like in a really good discussion mode. I feel like it's been a little bit of a while since we've had a really, really good one, because a lot of times it's kind of back and forth and there's not a lot of follow-up. This one was really nice, I think.
It was good.
Good.
Yeah.
I like this episode. Thanks for having me aboard.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It was nice talking to you guys. And I'll talk to you later.
I think it's fascinating is that I didn't say this, and I really thought about it, and I was like, we should have said we are doing the ultimate in social distancing.
Yeah, I know.
Because, we're show is literally spread all the way across the United States.
Well, exactly. This will be in the outtakes, so it'll still be there if people listen this far.
If you can get that far. Yeah, right, exactly.
Because Aaron tuned in, he's like, fuck this, guys.
What did I do?
Yeah, you were just like quiet for like 30 minutes. I was like, oh, did we kill Aaron?
Oh, you guys were just going at it. I was like, what's there for me to say right now?
Yeah, I know. I was just getting worried. I was like, where'd Aaron go? I was like, is he alive? Did we kill him?
The one thing I did want to say real quickly, since this is in the outtakes, about Narek, because everybody was like, they hate Narek. And I was like, I did too, but there are two things. One, he is the deepest the deepest character of the Romulans. I mean, he is the best evolved character of all of them, even if he's
two-dimensional instead of one-dimensional.
Two-dimensional, right, exactly. And Harry Treadway is, doing an excellent job. If nothing else, he's good at emoting with his face and, showing everything he needs. So as an actor, I got to give that guy props. He's helped make that character not as flat. Flat character, but I love the actor. The actor's doing a great job.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's done pretty good at that.
He's the Kai Winn of Star Trek Picard.
Kai Winn.
Yeah, except that Kai Winn was written to be an irritating, and she was actually really deep. That was an amazing. I'm still amazed at Louise Fletcher and how she had done Kai Winn. Because Kai Winn was awesome.
I mean, I hated her, but she was so good because you hated her so much. It was
well, great. That's it. You love to hate. Yeah.
I feel like that's how Narek is, because I just can't stand him, and which means he's doing so good. He's doing his job very well.
Yeah, but the problem is that I don't necessarily hate Narek.
I don't like
that. That's part of my problem. You know what I mean? I want to hate Narek, and I can't. He's just flat. You know, it's that's my problem. And Nerissa is the same way. She's just flat. Yeah. And I'm like,
one thing I did forget to say.
Yeah, I don't know.
One thing I did when there's lies within lies, I want to say that the AI liberation race isn't going to be as friendly to the senses as they think they're going to be. It's like, yeah, it's a call for help, but it's like, what are we going to do to you once we've done "quote unquote" helping you? You know,
what are we going to do to you?
Are they going to just assimilate them into their future robot culture? Like, it's just, are they going to be able to live their lives as they normally would? Like, I don't know. I think
wouldn't it be wild if they sent off the call and in came a Borg cube?
That'd be cool.
A bigger, better, the bigger, blacker Borg cube.
Bigger, blacker.
Well, or that the superior race that has always been around was just the creators of the Borg. And so you've got effectively Super Borg. And what they do is assimilate all of the synthetics, or the non-synthetics. They assimilate all the non-synthetics, and that's the way it works. So this is the super race of the Borg. That would be kind of cool, actually.
That would be cool. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be kind of disappointed if that doesn't happen now.
Well, I'm fine with it just being a Reaper like race, and like the thing which is why I think they're going to be kind of like just absorbed into whatever, because the Reapers they're like a sentient race of mechanical beings, and they indoctrinate people, which is basically just taking over their minds and make them work because they do have some sort of telepathy, which, you know, now that Sutra has the telepathy, maybe, you know, this alien race also has that. Other robot race has telepathy as well, or whatever works as telepathy for robots. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how that comes together.
It's kind of weird to see them like that, but I guess they are organic, so maybe there's a workaround for that, but
yeah. And also the Reapers just take everything and make it their own. So just that's why I've got a sneaky suspicion that they're going to get saved, quote unquote, but it's going to be like not the saving they want or expected.
Not like that. Not like that.
Don't save me.
And I feel like a lot of this is going to be, I mean, they've been setting up so much fear. You know what I mean? There's so much about the fear. I feel like that they're going to have to solution here. I mean, this is almost Tamerlanian, almost. Like, that's been a thing that I have put through a lot of my stories, too, is fear. Because that's a big deal, is fear makes people do stupid shit. You know, and that's sure. The whole thing. And, you know, or employing fear because you want respect. And you're not going to get respect because you fear and respect are not the same thing. You know, that kind of stuff. I feel like that's kind of a thing. I don't know. Yeah. So
we'll have to see. I mean, it's interesting. I'm excited. Now that there's like plot revealed, now that the plot has been revealed, there's so much more to talk about.
There really is, but I'm not irritated by that. It didn't actually bother me. I get that why it bothers you, and I don't blame you.
Thank you.
But it didn't bother me.
Thank you for not blaming me.
Well, I was going to blame you, but then I decided not to because I'm more like absolute candor now. So I was mad. No, I'm not mad anymore.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate for not being blamed forever for this.
But, oh, my God. I so want to play a Kuat Malat character now. And actually, I said, well, in Star Trek Adventures, I actually said that
to Holly doesn't want to melt herself.
The heat is on. In her house.
What's up with you, guy?
I had to restart my computer.
Slumming at home?
Yeah, slumming at home, but everything else is good. So, yeah, actually, what happened was I've been up here working, and so I was like, oh, okay, well, hey, David messaged me, and I messaged David. I'm like, hey, are we still on? And he's like, yeah, it's cool. I was like, yay, cool. And he was like, we're doing it at 10. And I'm like, okay, so that's like 10 minutes from now, right? Yeah.
I thought you'd been waiting for us for like 20 minutes. I felt bad. I was like, oh, crap, I forgot.
Oh, no. So I was just checking in to make sure.
Yeah,
so I went downstairs and I was like, hey, guys. And my wife's like, I made dinner. And I'm like, okay, I probably should eat that.
I gotta go.
Yeah, I felt bad. So when you
guys called, I was like, I'll be right there. I'm like trying to wolf down dinner because I didn't want to, like, she made dinner. And I was like, I felt really bad. I was like, aw.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It was like, no, it was cool. I didn't know she had done it. So I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm all ready.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had a thing this morning and Holly was like, can we do 10:30? And Aaron's like, how about 10? And I was like, yeah, that's cool. And then I totally forgot to loop you in. I'm sorry.
I was expecting 8 o'clock my time, so I was good.
Oh, cool. You were expecting? I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, we don't usually get started until about this time anyway, just because of shooting the shit and whatnot.
Well,
and yeah. Or technical issues.
Sorry, Holly.
Hello.
Oh, Holly.
I'm doing all right. I was singing a song to your heater because, you know, I was like, the heat is on. In her apartment. It's required. See, you were like, I gotta turn the heat off. I'm like, okay, I gotta sing a song.
Yeah, right.
Stuart felt slighted that you avoided him again, Holly.
From last week?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, every
did
time.
Tell him I had the, did you tell him I had the Rona?
The Rona. Do you have the Rona?
I don't think so. But
you don't sound
I'm
like
also
you have the
not
Rona.
Gonna go get tested for it.
Because no. It'll cost $1 zillion.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
And they'll stick a thing in your nose.
Oh, that
exactly.
I saw an infographic of that. That looks awful. I do not want to get tested for corona.
It's the same for not strep, but is it strep? Yeah, I think it's the same.
No, I've been tested for strep. They never stuck anything in my nose.
I've had that done.
Maybe the old school one, but I mean, the last time I got tested for strep, they just stuck something down my throat.
Oh, yeah. It's a no bueno.
Although those people who are human blockheads must not have an issue with it at all, because, I mean, they're used to sticking stuff on their nose.
Human blockheads?
Yeah, the people who stick nails in their nose and act like they're nailing themselves. They just know that they have that open cavity there, and it's just like a trick. It's like the clowns or whatever do that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Circus type thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Human blockheads, what the attraction's called.
Never knew that.
This is on the I'm not sure I wanted to know that sort of thing.
Oh, well, it's How About David?
Now I do.
Now you know.
David's just full of pointless information.
Yay!
Pointless little life forms. Let's kill you.
Oh, boy. Oh, my God. Have you guys been drinking? I know you guys all been off, but...
What else are you going to do? We're all in isolation.
I got Everclear.
Funny guy, because I'm actually, I still work.
I was at work today, too, and I'm a driving instructor, and I'm sitting there going, okay, wait, we can't maintain a 6-foot distance.
Right?
How's this going to work?
You ride in.
So, you roll down the window and you stick your head out like a dog.
Like
and everyone else has to do it too. It's called the dog maneuver. It's very similar to the Riker maneuver.
Okay, here's the deal. You're learning to drive, but I want you to roll down your window.
We're going to do the Ace Ventura mode.
Mm-hmm. All I picture is the Naked Gun scene where they're having the chase with the student driver.
Right.
Did you ever see that? That's hilarious.
Oh, man.
So good.
You know, I know I've seen The Naked Gun, and there's a Naked Gun 2.
Oh, there's a Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Is there a third? Yes. Well, I cannot recall that 33 and a image,
third, Holly. 33 and a third.
33 and a third?
Yes.
Yep.
Don't ask what happened to 3 until...
too many Naked Guns.
Don't ask
what happened. Yeah, because Naked Gun, it was Naked Gun 2.5, and then it was Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Oh, okay.
Don't ask what happened in between Naked Gun 2.5 and 3 1/3. We don't talk about that. That's what the Klingons
don't talk about.
I'm not allowed to be in that club. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Klingon Ridges Club. It's better not to know.
I don't want to be in that
term. I don't want to know.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Only news I saw is Star Trek Discovery Season 3 may not actually be airing anytime soon because
coronavirus.
But they finished shooting, so either... they have extensive reshoots to make it fit in with Star Trek Picard, or I don't know why they would delay it. I mean, post-production, I'm sure, could be done remotely. So it's not like...
Maybe they don't want to catch any bad flack for, like, not giving people CBS for free because that's, like, what everybody else is doing. It's like, here's 3 months free of this because you're stuck at home. Maybe they don't want to have to get lumped into that.
No. Or they want to delay its release so that it's not as long a wait between season 3 and 4.
Maybe.
Because those are the only two outcomes that I can think of that have that are related to coronavirus that make sense. Either they want to try to get down that space. But every single year, Discovery gets pushed back later and later and later. The first year it came out, it was like it hovered over 2007, 2018. And then, like, the second one came out toward the end or toward the middle of 2016, and now this one's slated to come out never.
Slated to come out in the middle of never.
So, I mean, like, Discovery doesn't have, like, an annual fall because it falls a different month every single time it's aired so far. It keeps getting pushed back further and further and further. So, who knows? Like, at this point, maybe it won't come out till winter of next year.
Pretty, Discovery's always been, to me, it seems like a really ambitious show. You know, the scope and everything they're trying to do, set-wise and story-wise. It's pretty nuts when you think about it, you know. That, you know, it's a CBS All Access start off with something so over the top. Well, they could have picked something a little more grounded, you know.
The only reason it was that far over the top is because they had a blank check from Netflix that they got the cash in, and they had zero risk season one. And then there's like, oh, well, I guess we got to rein things in now.
Well, obviously they're doing something right because they got a bunch of other stuff greenlit. So, I mean, they must be making some kind of money.
And I enjoy it.
I keep having this argument with people online. I mean, I come from television. And so, you know, that's what my mom did and stuff. And it's like nobody greenlights anything if it's not going to be lucrative. I mean, and so it's like, I know that everybody keeps saying, well, yeah, but this is, and I'm like, no, you don't understand. I mean, they tried to launch UPN off of Voyager, and Voyager didn't make enough money to pull UPN, and UPN crashed hard. You know, so it's like, they're not going to sit there and say, well, we'll just keep throwing money at Discovery in hopes that it'll keep CBS All Access afloat, unless they were actually making money.
Well, UPN, like... I had to disconnect my cable and put rabbit ears on my computer to even see UPN. So UPN wasn't exactly the most user-friendly experience out there.
It was not kind like of CBS All Access is.
I mean, like, it's really not, it's no different than Netflix. It's super easy to access. You don't have to unplug your cable.
Although you can't, like, make your own, you can't, like, sort your shows. So, like, I always have to go in and search for Star Trek.
Oh, it is a garbage interface. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's, I personally, like I said, I have always viewed this as I am a patron of Star Trek. That's fine by me.
Yeah,
you know, being somebody who has a Patreon, as an artist who has a Patreon, you know, this all makes total sense to me.
Oh, sure.
$10 patron.
Yeah, but like the, I mean, I was just saying the app organization is kind of garbage. Like, it doesn't really, like, normalize what shows you could recently watch. I literally always have to search for Star Trek. Like, why isn't this on, this is the only thing I watch on CBS.
Right.
Why is this not the,
that's what I was thinking too.
I mean, like, it's just a garbage interface. It's just like they built CBS All Access for Star Trek, it got pushed back, and then the Good Fight or whatever was the first headlining show. But this was originally built around Star Trek. But Star Trek's not, like, easy to access. You have to search for it every time. I'm like, that's weird. Like, shouldn't your, like, headline shows that are the reason you subscribe to this be, like, right at the top, right at your fingertips, like, the easiest maybe thing to access?
Like, maybe it's, like, subliminal. It's like they want you to see all the shows that they offer.
Maybe it's CBS partial access.
They're not, like, new shows.
They're playing that game with me on Netflix, though. Every time I get into Netflix, I'm like, I've only got 12 things I watch total. Mm-hmm. You know, and half of them are Star Trek.
And you're like, so where is my playlist? Where's my
list? Right, exactly. It's like the fourth or fifth thing down is your list.
Well, the first thing is
things you might like. Things other people like you have liked.
Netflix changes. Usually my list is first, but sometimes it forgets and it does put it down. But most of the time, my list is first on Netflix.
Yeah, mine's not. Mine's never is.
Yeah. Mine's always all over the place. Like, I always don't. I don't. I never know if I have to scroll up or if I have to scroll down to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's get started, guys, because we don't want to get super late.
Yeah. I'll start a new.
We're already super late.
I'll start a new file.